Good morning. I think I just start with our mission. Still a lot of work to do. Welcome all members, welcome the special advisors. Before 2 o'clock, and so we got offered that to the nation, and I must consider today. And we hope that other parties then will come in also, because we have invited all of them to come and try to persuade us. Whatever area they think is not correct or belongs to another thing, if they're not here, then they're denying themselves the right to participate in it. But the Rules Committee is a very big committee, it's difficult to work. That's why the Rules Committee is against all other parties. It's very important to come and persuade us here. We wouldn't find the Rules Committee negotiating for a 15-page document. It would be absolutely unnecessary for the Rules Committee to do so. The Rules Committee is meant to receive the report and some options when we didn't agree, not to start negotiating. Then parties that are not here, I think they're denying themselves their right to participate in the report. Last week, Friday, we dealt with Chapter 1. appointed initiates. We only say that must raise an issue. Take it back to the National Assembly and start the detail on the issue of privilege. Chapter 2, there was no issue that was raised. Just to ensure that if colleagues during the week they pick up something that we have harsh on, they should really remind us to do something. We are doing this policy, but when we go to the Rules Committee, we just present this and we agree whenever time we go there. There will be no other negotiation, really, truth speaking. We go there, we vote, we move on. On two, there was no issue there. There was no issue there. Opening of Parliament and State of the Nation address, very clear. Everyone accepts that. I'm sure that all caucuses accepted party caucuses. And the presiding officer and members, that is chapter 3, was no issue there. There were some issues. The issues were covered there. In terms of effectiveness, all these adjectives there, I didn't have that. Some collision on some of the issues, right of parties and right of members.
The general authority
of the speaker, the issue that we work up there, but was broadly accepted by the caucuses, that we have improved the language and to be very specific on some of the issues. There were issues that they thought that we mustn't repeat what we already covered by the Constitution. But that's the issue that was raised. If there's another issue, I'm doing this policy cost. From Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we may pick up something. That when we go to the Rules Committee, don't come back and say, no, hold on, Rules Committee. I forgot about this. We are doing that purpose only. Because the subcommittee must be very tired. We mustn't go to the Rules Committee straight and start negotiating there. And then, Caspar, any issue there on chapter 6? That would be what?
Nothing new.
Okay, thank you.
Chairperson, I understand that you wanted to just bring us all back on board again, but I just wanted to understand the process, because my impression was that we working through it, and that we then receive a revised document, and that we then scrutinize that very thoroughly, because on some of the issues it was really just language issues, etc. Now, we can't submit a document to the Rules Committee that we don't feel 100% okay with. So my understanding is that the cluster is capturing and that we then receive a draft again.
What is going to happen? The process. After we've concluded all the work that is before us, we'll allow CASPA a few days to capture everything. And then once the draft is finalized, we meet to look at the draft. Once we are all happy that the club represents general the views of the club committee, the Rules Committee then will see. Don't forget that the Rules Committee will see in October. And we don't have sufficient time now. 2 years we have done this one. We can't delay now everything because of some technicalities. Once CAFA, I think, has already started to work on some of the when the all focuses happen. And then we present that to the Rules Committee once all of us are able to in terms of what we are proposing, and then we can then move on. But of course, time really is not on our side, generally speaking. 2 years was official. We can't delay it until the end of the year. And then there is my student shuttling again. The colleagues, weekend is a long time. We don't want to set you up with your partners. We don't want parties saying you raise this issue, a member didn't capture it. We just allow you space that in from the future. Well, not actually nothing new. Yes. Okay, we're not there. Let's give you some listen, okay?
Yeah, I'm from Janet's information, 18A, removal from Office of Speaker, which is a speaker. Now, I'm ranged because we don't know who will be next speaker. Okay, and looking at the future as well. Now, it's a question of, did we deal in the figure an opinion on the fact that we should look at a teacher's ballot. And I'm just worried that although I wasn't here last week Friday, the teacher's ballot is a difficult issue. Especially as I was concerned with the teacher's ballot.
The EFF, I think, were the ones who were insisting that there should be a secret ballot in such a case, but I haven't seen anything further from them in that connection. There's no constitutional requirement that I'm aware of. But if they get a legal opinion which argues that there should be such a ballot, the member would have to reconsider.
Okay, now, this is an issue that we've been dealing with not over the last year and a half that the Congress people have been really talking about, and there have been other parties that have been really talking about it. And it was said that the Rules Committee will finalise the matter and bring it into the rules, because the Constitution talks about a resolution for the removal, but the Constitution also says that they are voted in by means of secret ballot. So we've got a balance to ask, and I think we can please make a proposal that this matter is looked into and that we have a legal assistance to add that one.
Okay.
We'll make proposals. You know that there's an issue about vote of no confidence. I think it's almost challenging someone. I think the AFF was almost taken to court on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing always is to wait until the court decides. But what you are proposing is that to be a majority. And then the majority, of course, if the court says it's a secret ballot, of course, let's amend our rules accordingly. Yes, we can't wait forever because it's taken there. Because even though, what is it, Obama? They've taken us to court on this vote of no confidence in UDM.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked for their point in court already. Let us wait until court checks it through. Once it's decided on that matter, should will have some impact in terms of the removal of the speaker.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be argumentative here, okay? But in some times, we've also got to learn that we should also establish our own rules and not expect the court to make decisions on our behalf. So I think if it is okay, I would submit a proposal within the next day or two, and then we can look at it. But it's a question of, I really think that we should align this to the Constitution and our rules.
Okay. You can consider something, and then we'll look at it. Of course, then we'll decide. And of course, the court will decide where it's through the end. What should be the decision on that? Chapter 4. Any issue there that causes you thinking, would any capture from your passage? Teaching of the assembly. I know that we have to deal with motion without notice. And the removal of the president. Those are two issues that are submitted by the speaker for us to consider the representation. Arrangement of the business committee. Yes, ma'am?
The main concern is the arrangement of the order of business, that we are taking away the powers of the programming committee, and we are literally placing a complete mandate in the hands of the majority. And while I understand that a majority in Parliament must mean something, we're also a democratic Parliament, and that's why we have the programme. And so I think we must be very careful when we start drafting the order of the business paper today, that we make sure that the programming committee retains the necessary mandate that they have to create the order of business. And it's not just a decision that, well, yes, we hear what the programming committee says, but the majority says it doesn't really matter. We can't have a situation like that. It's not democratic, and it's not even good practice in a democratic parliament.
I understood the party that say the programming committee is going to meet, work out the agenda or the order paper issues. If there are no consensus, the three offices will take a time. It's almost a deadline, deadlock breaking mechanism. The matter was taken to court at a certain point in time. The court says the problem with the programming committee, there's no deadlock breaking mechanism. Then if you want the entire team to vote there, it's always majority party is going to prevail. The point that we are saying that they will meet the programming committee, have a discussion, persuade each other. If they agree, their agenda with the Assembly. If they don't agree, the chief whip is sort of in concurrence with the speaker, other consultation is the leader of government business. On these on government related issues, they will take a final decision. That's what really is the agenda of the commissioner. And but surely, for the last 21 years, anyway, we did one motion of no confidence. They've never differed to take confessor's position. But that motion of no confidence, even then, I think parties, they overplay that democratic life is high. We should have resolved this matter a long time ago. Even on a vote of no confidence. As far as I know, Casper and Colette, you have been here, but only if we didn't agree. All other issues over the last 21 years, we only agree to this. Because generally, the program of Parliament should be accepted by God and some parties. But only that one, that then they've gone to court, the court gave a decision, almost asking the rule, all those matters. That was a bigger problem for us. We shouldn't have answers, but parties anyway, there are consequences on our decision. And then because of the deadlock-breaking mechanism, the three officers then will take a final decision. But they will meet, and the program will be convened by speaker. Have a discussion, they persuade other colleagues. The leadership will be here. We'll try to persuade you. If you refuse to be persuaded there, then the two officers will take a final decision. That's the decision that has been made. Let us move. Chapter 5, all the public meetings, rules of debate. Yeah, of course, we are going to deal with some of the issues that are referred to our first.
Okay.
Yes, that's it.
So this one comes to the meeting session. Okay, I just want to raise one concern. Taking into consideration that we are a constitutional democracy, I just think that we maybe need to put in here a maximum number of meeting sessions that will take place at the same time. If we can have 6 or 7 or 8 meeting sessions at the same time, then so I think if it's limited to 3 at the same time, or 4 at the same time, or 2 at the same time, but not
unlimited. It would be absolutely unwise for anyone to have many penalties trained over the legislation in Ankara. 2 and 3 maximum. Naturally, we won't have a venue unless we go out and arrange some venues. The only 3 venues for many penalties would be old assemblies, but the C249 and Good Hope. There's not that many for many plenaries. Generally, there won't be so many. 2 or 3 too much that would happen. Yes.
So does it mean that we can amend that 313 to say more than 1 minute in session may take place, the maximum of 3 or 4?
I just wanted to say perhaps we must just also alert Ms. Carter that Lidl was here. She actually presented on behalf of the caucus that met. So we've already captured the concern. So I think it's important that he's just aware that Liesl did in fact introduce some of the positions of the smaller caucus into our meeting that took place on Friday.
I understand that, but the problem is we don't have an updated list of what we didn't capture.
No.
So
there is no harm for you to start the meeting, no harm to do that.
Okay.
Many plenaries, I think we are out of that. And there's a lot of discussion anyway about the speaking list, what you want to do with that, and share that in a second position on that. Or the proposal is what we have put. Any other issue that on chapter 5, we think when you are at home, the confession you are not, you have discovered you are not satisfied. I'm starting this thing because when you are there with your leaders of your party, you don't want to say, no, but I read this thing that the signatory didn't hatch us. But then this is the signatory that is wrong. Did not ask who are members, say, no, I forgot to deliver this thing. That's why I'm trying to do that. And of course, the E issue was raised there on 29. Not to pretend that I've been talking actively or chatting all these matters we went to that. come to the issue, remove all the members. I think we have there for the workload. It's something that I think we're going to discuss in the whole committee. I think so. And then there was no issue then, chapter 5. Conduct of the microphone in the chamber. They are waiting now already. When a member continuously calls, speaker, stop, switch off the microphone. And the members realize that the speaker is getting tired. But they tried their level best to be. I think our speakers are extremely tired. Because you can see how members are doing there. The speaker is told, please, time is over. But continuously reading as if it's not being told. I think they've been trying their level best to accommodate. Actually,
Chairperson, you have mentioned the issue of the control of the microphone. It is happening at present, and I think it is about time that happens. I just wanted to say that we must not restrict the ability of the presiding officer to exercise that right. It is a right of any presiding officer in any city council or anything. And therefore, I would like to also just suggest that we don't need sub-rule 2. It's not necessary for the presiding officer to inform the House. I mean, the House becomes aware of that clearly, and that is only exercised when one or more members become completely unruly. 59A2.
When issue in such an order, the presiding officer must inform the House about it.
It's not an order, just controlling it. What I'm just saying, Jefferson, I think it was written before the system was adjusted.
They're saying that we must remove two.
Yeah.
Because we can't constrain the power of a presiding officer to deal with the mic when the member. Because I listen to this speaker. Try to be as kind as possible. But sometimes you got abused by members.
Mm.
And then start calling a member, please member, they feel abused. And then the microphone will be switched off, yes?
On the one side, I agree, okay, that it can be removed. But on the other side, I think of what happened in this year, where people moved forward to check. So maybe leaving this in and saying, if you are not going to sit down, we're going to switch off the mic. You know, it's just to cover that situation. But it seems not that there was no warning, but you can have a train incident where people just all go forward to check to the speaker.
Chairperson, what I'm just saying was when this was written, it was still when the system was not adjusted, and it was necessary for the speaker to say to the NA table staff, please turn off the mic. But we are saying it's not necessary, so that was the order that we referred to. Clearly, depending on the circumstances, the presiding officer will in any case inform the House, but I mean, practically speaking, we've seen it in the House already exercised, and there's no problem with that.
Okay. Can we move on? We have done the first point of order that has been causing great harm. I think so detailed now, very clear. And chapter 6 was discussion, additional questions. Any issue that during the weekend members first should be raised? Okay.
Yes, I think we saw last in Parliament, the week before, again what happens when deputy president comes to ask questions to the House. Now, I think it's great that we've got a deputy president to come to the House to the minute, 2 weeks to come ask questions. However, what it does mean is every other factor that has questions on that day is severely limited, because the deputy president's questions and their questions are clustered together. Now, I'm
actually, I mean, if one looks at the National Council of Provinces, as a literary system for every single question has an answer. And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that that's a good thing or a bad thing, in fact, probably it's very good. But what I'm saying is that I think you should look at the deputy president's question being its own entity, and the questions to that specific cluster being its own entity. It might be that we extend the question once, but I think it's only fair and courteous to the members of those clusters and those ministers that they get a specific question
answered.
Just for you to present this thing to the rules committee, no one should say it's not captured well by the writer. So I keep on reminding you that we don't come back and say, but when the party says we didn't raise this issue, don't say I was not allowed to raise it. I forgot about it. Carry the responsibility, not as clerk, but sometimes the signatures carry the responsibility as necessary. We must protect them. The national vote to take a decision on that issue. Proportional allocation of time. Global time is given for a vote declaration. And then the team then will say, because I've got 3 minutes, I'll take only three. 1 minute, 1 minute, three. There will be no again. 3 minutes for everyone. And you sit there and see the next day doing something that is not correct, you know, consuming much time. Proportionality anyway is not anti-democratic. We are here in Parliament on proportional declaration in terms of vote. We have dealt with this issue, I think there's an issue there. Either you revolutionary decision can rest on. We are not starting this rule for yourself.
Exactly.
Ourselves, we ended up talking because of what happened in the house. These rules must stand the test of time. When Honorable Clark is not here for the next 20 years, those who come should appreciate your effort. You should not start rules because you are worried with Malima. Therefore, everything is about them. It can't be that. We started the process long before they came in here. And this process must outline all of us.
Chief, one thing. When the Volga run, in the division, Chief, we seem to ask that so 85-22, when daughters is locked, barred, no member shall name the city of each other until the result of the division is declared. Now, I'm sure you watched members try and push their way through. And the deputy chief would have thought that, well, they could only go to our heads. And thankfully, the staff was strong enough to say, you cannot come to chamber. It's a very important thing when the doors of Parliament are closed. It's a very sacred thing that happens, actually, when something like that happens. That's why the division falls. The series called everyone back in. And it must be a serious thing. Maybe just a beefing up of two, that when the doors have been barred, no member may enter, may can or shall, or something that just indicates that by in most circumstances are they going to push through the staff to come in. Because we physically saw what happened. It was quite disturbing, actually, the way they were trying to get in the right answer.
Question.
No.
Fully support the principle. Is there any, since we have the state law advisors here, is there any weight difference between shall and may? Because then there are other clauses that we also need to review. If shall has a greater weight, then it must go back to shall.
In the process of making these changes, the shalls have become must. And that is in line with the Constitution. The Constitution uses must. Where there's a shall, it has become a must. But where it is shall not, it has become may not. You say must not.
May not.
May not, and I think may not is straight as strong as the opposite of shock. Shall becomes must not. But where what is shall not, it becomes may not. And that has the same effect as what shall not has.
When we deal with your rules, we consider the way the construction is written. That he uses must instead of shall. And then the language team, they ended up discussing whether shall is Victorian language. And they wasted a lot of our time. But we are persuaded that must prevail. But the team is here, that's after the recognition of our council.
What did you hear?
Yes, I think the wonderful illustration is what is the difference between shall and not. That's what I understand. It's fundamentally shall is descriptive. Even if you use must, in the context of this, if you say you shall not do something, it's very different. If you say may, then you have a discretion. So may always denotes a discretion. So the language of interaction is created in how you use the rules that we love, meaning the may, and then it's your foot into a year.
Okay. So now let us move. Go ahead. Yes.
I'm sick of our technology. If a member completely finds to come into the chamber, because they actually know each other, they are part of the chamber. Could the presiding officer or the chief name them? Because they actually know each other. So what could be done to stop, like, a raucous event happening at the door, which happened the other day? I mean, because theoretically they're not in the chamber. They stand outside the chamber attempting to gain access to the chamber. So I think that's what, I mean, we're not going to solve all the problems today, but I think we're going to be
The rule did say lock, the doors are locked. And when the doors are locked, it's impossible to get in. Because that wasn't happening anymore. The doors are closed, and I think service officers stand across the doors to prevent members coming in. If members are forcing their way in, then that would be a breach, and that should be a reported to the presiding officer who would have to take whatever steps would be necessary. Yeah.
Any member who witnessed that must report that to the presiding officer. The general members, they do respect the door. Standing up there, it's just like that. Not too full. If you have seen something like that, surely they will parry themselves on that field this month. If the hotel will parry issue, really, they're managing the politics of parliament, they must talk to their cousin nicely. But I don't think we should have the rules more than what we have done already in terms of the rules. Okay. Maybe it's one man also. I can guess who's a man.
Some member.
Putting all the presidents to that. Okay, colleagues, let us move.
No, I have a question on 84. What's the beginning of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Which one?
84.
I thought you were ready to tell.
No.
There was a fight. And we don't want to make war about winning the listing.
No, but that you put option. Option 10 and option 4. The options, right? The rules committee to take a decision. It's not unwise though to go to a rules committee with this.
No, we want to leave it as a
group. We want to increase it to 10. In fact, I wanted 30.
Yeah.
10 is a problem. 30.
Yeah,
a person must raise a question of the division of their house and then they would share to win. Shouldn't be a waste of time. Shouldn't be a waste of time. One main party must rally other parties to support your group. Parties are very reasonable, DM parties. You shouldn't have one person just calling us for the vote. Can't we call us? Yes. What do we have on?
Yeah, just on item 87. Was there any
provision
made on that
on
item
87?
87.
It's out.
Oh. Okay.
No, not that. Definitely not that. That's doing well. That's doing well.
Now, my copy is all in bold.
You're all in bold. Yeah, doing well at Christmas. State law advisor, from time to time we have been discussing when there is that routine we want to bring to our attention to intervene. And then Anthony, we intervene. Other opportunities, we intervene. From time to time, don't be quiet. When we think that there's something that is wrong, just intervene to assist us on the language. The policies belong to us. The language belongs to those who are. But the policies belong to us. Okay. Can we move on, Chapter 7? And of course, we've got one area that we have to deal and finalize today. Motion without notice. Again, colleagues, bear in mind that we are drafting the rules for the next narrative. That our anger with the situation now should make it difficult to take a correct position. On motion, except the motion without notice, is there another issue there? That you think is wrong, is unconstitutional, won't stand a test of time?
Which one is that?
We have chapter
7.
On that one, I mean, we are going to discuss the motion of without notice. Any issue there that you think is compromised? Language has been improved. Head law advisor is happy the way we adopted it in terms of the issue.
Yes, the
issue
is that section
8
non-merges,
because
also here in this chapter, one
third of the time. Of course, they remove our perception.
Yeah.
I was told that one person was saying, there's nothing like a tissue in the photo. And therefore, we'll retain that we look at all the president. It's something that I want to say with that. Of course, 89, then go, once we discuss it, we go to that section of motion. And the motions are fine, sequencing is fine. Because as we deal with them, we'll bear in mind that we have agreed that sequencing is commissioned. The main purpose of the teaching will be number one. And then all other matters will follow. It's just important that we do so. Chapter 8, discussion, urgent matters. Any new issues in chapter 8?
Yes?
Yeah? You are happy?
You decided to move the time to 10 o'clock on the day in which it was
five.
It must be. You are coming to that.
We're going to come back.
No, no, coming back to that.
That okay.
Submission will be made.
Okay. Yes. I just want to understand, we, on Friday, we briefly discussed that there should actually be a difference between, and that is in terms of Rule 98, a draft resolution and a topic for discussion. Because we have argued that the minutes that we are providing for proper regulation of motions without notice, this is probably the area that is going to be targeted for, to just drag on and drag on. So we said we will have to look at the time limitation or introduction of a topic for discussion as well as the draft decision. So I just want to make sure that we are drafting that and that we will come back to that issue, as long as we understand the principle that we've agreed to.
Chapter 9?
8.
8 o'clock.
Okay.
8 o'clock. Matter of the national public importance we are calling that. 9. Any issue that we think? You've got issues.
Yeah.
What are the issues?
The old file.
105.
Okay.
What do you want us to do? I thought it was
the
issue.
It was the issue. Well, I don't think there was a deal like the GD insisted that he wanted to leave. So I consulted with the person who had the issue and I wanted to leave. And decided to think that it was not the issue. See, Chairperson, the danger of allowing one minister to answer several statements, and I heard your argument that the statements may have two or three components, or maybe three components, and the minister can answer it, or even a faster and the minister.
I think the point of limiting the minister to two statements, to responding to two statements, one in his own portfolio and perhaps one in the cluster, is the reason.
I thought the discussion there was that what you need is an answer. What you need is an answer. Whether a minister is tall or short, it doesn't matter. What you need is an answer. When a minister stand there and answer your question, he's giving you an answer. Because not really, because we had a long discussion on this matter. And we agreed with what is reflected now, the rules that are drafted here. And if you want to reinstate the old one, of course, can put the two options. The one that you have already put in, and the old one there. Present it to the Rules Committee, they will take a decision. But we had a long discussion there. We went only to say ministers, deputy ministers must be allowed to answer. And then you said the minister must allow time to answer. For me, if Honorable Naledi Pandor answers all the questions in the chamber, well and good. The whole issue that we want there is the minister answer. That's not one. One answer. No. What you want is that the main purpose of answer, question and answer is an answer. If the minister, whoever is given a right to answer you, answers you, fine, it's answer. Because you don't want to hear the minister, unless what you say, we want the minister to be here. You don't want answers, you want the presence of the minister. It's a separate issue, then we can discuss that. The minister says, my fellow minister, go and answer all these questions. And the minister answers all of them. What is your problem? There will be no problem.
Because as a result of the moment, you've got 7 ministers that are in the house all the time. And unfortunately, you've used Honorable Lady Pandor, and she's what I'm going to do. She's in the house all the time. She's one of the ministers that has her accountability there. She's there. And you have other ministers who are ever in the house.
But questions are answers.
No, but you have to be accountable. You're shocked. You cannot, it's not fair that you have other ministers being held accountable for you.
This is Jefferson. I hear what Natasha is saying, but this is member statement. It's difficult to know which member, because a member can make any statement at any stage and can in fact go into the house with 3 statements and then decide which one to read into that record. So ministers,
there's
no notice. So that is the issue.
There's no notice.
Secondly, a process is developed that member statements where it was originally probably intended to raise issues of constituents, to say, you know, this has happened and my office has approached the minister's office so many times and I have not had a response, whatever. At least that is brought into the public space. And then if that minister is not there and somebody else is there, then at least they can say we will follow up and whatever. But the nature of the members' statements has changed. Mostly it relates to by-election results, it relates to, well, in some cases, in some parties, it relates to very sort of other issues as well. But the point is, it's difficult sometimes to determine for ministers who should reply to that, because it's not related to a specific minister's portfolio. And that is just why we've decided to change it, to make it possible for anybody there in fact, reply.
No, it's very important that we are clear, all of us here, that a member stand up in the chamber to read the statement. No one has given a notice. Then you can't have a situation when ministers don't answer, because there will be a few that cannot not answerable to the chamber. He said that any minister who's there, who's confident to answer, will stand up and answer the question. There's no notice there that Natasha on Wednesday next week is going to put this statement. There's nothing like that. And then you have to wait until that way.
Actually, I was involved with the original production of member statements, and you see that there are more member statements than there are opportunities to reply by ministers in any case. So every member raises an issue on a different subject, different departmental topic. You won't get all your answers in any case. And initially the idea of having ministerial responses was resisted by members. They said, this is our time. This is not time for the executive. And it was only subsequently that it was decided, well, let's give the executive an opportunity to comment if there are comments they want to make. And so it was always seen as a limited opportunity for responses off the cuff by members of the executive. You know, so that's where it comes from, and that's why that balance is not there between ministers and members. And it, as Amanda was saying, if you want all ministers to be available to respond, they all have to be present on the day.
If the minister, they come, all of them, they sit there, there's nothing in question, no statement happens for them. They are detained there. Can't work that way. I thought there are many ministers after this, to capture every person, to allow democratic participation, accountability and accountability of ministers to the shame. I think as this answer is reaching there, it's far better. It will then cover you better. But also bearing in mind, though, that this, a serious argument about the matter of block, and project members go on many times to go into their positions. That members are not just sitting here for questions. They go and do constituencies. And in fact, my view anyway, that we may need the 2 months members going there and do their work today. Then to be here for questions, for motions, statements, and the insults, all those. That they must go there and do their work. That's what I would propose in relevant forums. Because we can't rely. No members, You are said, Natasha, must go to your constituents in Mamelodi. No, not only in Kent, not in Kent. Everyone goes there and link up with the masses of our people that we receive. Don't come here for a statement about a drunken person somewhere. Because in motion, you have not deserved to lose the need. And therefore, we have a lot of time here, generally speaking. And anyway, that is another discussion I think colleagues will engage once we discuss it. In fact, it was anyway, 6 months here, 6 months in constituencies, long time ago. We come here, 5 months here. And in constituencies, no one goes to them. We didn't meet them only once a month. Those colleagues who are deployed, Kaspar, you know, if you are in Southern Taser, then you are deployed in Wapu. You can't do a constituency. Completely, you can't. And then I think that's a lot better anyway. You can't do constituency. You must have more time for members to do their constituency. Come here, very intensive sitting. Not all of these sometimes that are wasting our time. And going in that with it. But I think that would be a discussion that is going to happen very soon. And the members of parliament must prepare themselves on that discussion. Then it's separate from ministers, yes. Yeah? But let us move to... Yes.
Yes. I simply know that in the past, one of the issues was that the deputy minister's constituency in the House of the Ministers. But given the fact that ministers call you, that if there's some point the committee that wants to consider, the minister in fact delegating that ministry typically to answer the questions on behalf of the minister. And the reason I make that suggestion is that the deputy minister also comes to the House. And then they can do one complaint. The complaint to the ministers be one of the country and deals with the reply of the whole government.
In some ways, I think we have agreed that the deputy minister has also my
partner. That's right.
If that means chapter 10. Okay, let us deal with that in chapter 10. So take chapter 10. Yes.
Yeah.
Don't you think that is commonly used chapter 10?
Okay, so it's the submission level right now, so
please
put it out.
No, I think he will assist us in chapter 10. Let us go to motion without notices.
The previous document, I was asked to refine it on the basis of discussions that took place, and the new one, dated 14 September, now has in 2C all the criteria with which a motion without notice must comply, and you also includes, amongst others, must deal with only one step of matter, must consist of a clear and succinct proposed resolution, may not contain statements, quotations, arguments, other matters not strictly necessary to make the proposed resolution intelligible, etc., which all points to the fact that this is not an opportunity for member statements. A draft resolution is a proposal that the House take a formal decision on a matter. And for the House to do that, the decision must be very clear and short and to the point. And so when it comes to the vetting of motions without notice as circulated, these long ones that have become member statements will not be allowed and will be so that member will not be seen by the presiding officer in House with the opportunity for motion without notice arises. But the member will be informed that you've made a statement, you have not confined yourself to a draft resolution. So this will be one of those hurdles that have to be met for each motion without notice. And then it's made clear in 2F that if a motion does not comply with the criteria, the member or the member's party must be informed accordingly, and the proposed motion without notice may be adjusted and resubmitted as a motion without notice for the next sitting day when they're taken, or may be presented as a notice of motion, in fact. So if you don't comply with the criteria, you lose your opportunity on the day, but you do get an opportunity to adjust it for the next day on which they're taken, or to give notice. I think that covers the issues.
Where they certainly haven't met the criteria. And I don't think it is the responsibility of members of Parliament to determine whether or not these motions comply with the criteria. It's in fact the NA Cable's responsibility. And unfortunately, the NA Cable is a bit serious in finding out whether these motions deal with the criteria. So I think we need to look at making sure that, you know, before people read out from the House, the NA Cable will make sure that they meet the necessary criteria. Look, there's a difference. I mean, there's another day where legal did a motion which had been circulated, and it was a bit of a legal procedure because I put the gas and I took it. And, you know, we all had a deal on that, and it actually wasn't right. But in other respects, there have been notices about motions that have been pure member states. Not been criteria. They have been circulated accordingly. But I think that we do need to make sure that the NA Cable stops them in their tracks when they originally circulated.
Just to bring to your attention to the comment on this, that they wish forum to get this issue. I think past Kata and the assembly that all that team at the time. You took a decision that now you change the way of doing things. That the motion is not notice will be circulated to all members. If no party object, then it's read in the chamber. Then you said no, it must be read first and the chamber must be charged. The problem now that we are facing is that situation. That no one can do this, the system up there is a few law statements. Politics are controversial sometimes very hard to other members of Parliament. Unless we go back to what we used to do, that you circulate your motion without notice to all members, all parties. If parties say no, we don't agree with this, then we can't do it in the chamber. Because we have our within the chamber, but not just that one also. That a member stand up there, convey condolences and his objections. In fact, one of the worst things that I got shouldn't happen anyway. A member stand up there, convey condolences to the family of Honorable Mulu, because Mulu was a member of Parliament, passed on, then the motion only charges. Then it becomes just a sheet. Because that means you change the way you have been waiting before. Secondly, if members say no, but I'm not sure that if all parties, a single party can simply reject it, therefore there will be no other motion without notice. But that's an issue that we will address. How do you deal with this issue? Because even when they reject it anyway, they read the statement. We agree with express our own condolences to the family, but we object to the motion. It becomes very, very clumsy because Parliament is a very important body of our people. If we start doing all these things, something must be done. Get rid of this, once and for all, or you amend the deposit. I've always said they do anyway, that the sky won't fall if you get rid of it sooner than yesterday. Because people can still move motions. For debates, motions, so we can do that. Because once the entire society is so worried about the manner we are conducting ourselves, because few individuals will be rejected. Because it's unheard of for members of parliament rejecting a motion of condolences to their colleagues who pass on. It's just a matter. The best thing, the rule committee to meet and say, get rid of this. All the amended accordingly. Bearing in mind again that we are drafting this rule for future generations. But in the current situation that is completely embarrassing for us, how do you deal with it? We know that in terms of the proposed sequence, some of these rules that are accepted by the chamber is before the end. Maybe you cannot be worried so much about the fact. At the moment, I think it's embarrassing for us. Then something must be done. Either we go back to federations, God rejected. Or a threshold of parties must reject it. Because then members start writing motions that are relevant for congratulatory or for expressing condolences to families. I think we must then look at it. That's why we have drafted it. Mm-hmm. Members must look at it really and make a proposal. That's right.
So, now, firstly, I want to take the rules right. The people's forum is a proposal to the forum, and I think it is very out of order for you, Chair, to say every time I make mention of Carter and Sandy, you know, you make these decisions. If it's a proposal to the forum, we could not make the decision. So I just want to get that record straight. But, Chair, okay, firstly, on item number 2A, in a manner consistent with democracy, okay, I would just like to, I've actually raised these things with Comrade Judy. In last week. I just want to get clarity on what are we needing in a manner of consistent with democracy. The reason I'm saying that is that we are going to start using it in the same format as we are going to say our statement. There is, if a political party gets the opportunity every 2 or 3 weeks to actually, or 3 cities, to do a motion without notice, we cannot decide when someone is going to pass away. We cannot decide. Congratulations might be okay, but I think when it comes to specifically condoning such things, I think we also need to be very strict down the lines of it's got to be non-political, number one. Number two, it's got to be congratulatory, but not congratulations because you do any of it. It's got to be events or things that are happening that is, you know, that should be recognized. Then the other thing is the condolence vote, and that is what we should be given to see. Some of the proposals that I've actually given, as well as when we met in the caucus committee, were that we should possibly look at this. I understand we can submit it, number one, okay, get it emailed through, but to have 5 political parties respond to it, I can tell you we're going to have very few motions in the House, and sometimes it is. Because the system is for the party. You know, Parliament doesn't only exist of an entire notion of the Democratic Alliance and the ANC. The IFP is also tough when it comes to resources. You know, everyone is running around. You're sitting in 2, 3, 4 committees. So I'm saying is that saying 5 must agree is going to be a problem. I would actually say, if 2 come back and say we reject it, okay, the majority and minority or 3 parties reject it, then we should try and accept it, because otherwise we are going to create ourselves an administrative nightmare. So then the last point is, I really also honestly believe we've got a voting system, we've got a computer system that we spend a fortune on. Once we've got the motion, the list, that has been approved, that has been checked, that it is non-political, that it is a condone or it is congratulatory or of a special nature, okay, then the table can actually add it on a speaker's list. Now, have a speaker's list for it. So you know that the next motion that is going to stand up is going to be, for example, the ANC on the Comrades Matter. The next person is going to be the Democratic Alliance on whatever issue or a condolence motion. So it is clear, and that is the only thing that can be discussed. So I think it needs to function, but we've got to be careful not to create an administrative nightmare for ourselves.
Okay. No. Cut. This, the point that you are in, this has been working very well. In fact, 2009, long time ago, we have been waiting all the parties. And this is a weak parliament. And take a decision. That's known. Members, even if not approved by other parties, they go to the chamber, they read, and it must be rejected by the chamber. This has been working all the way, and then in the rules committee anyway. The whip party reported to us. That's why the issue gets me. That was a very strange situation because under the name of the whip forum is a consultative body, not a decision maker. But on this matter, they make a decision. And the rules committee says that it's wrong to do so. And they accepted the decision. Then it became almost a decision of our rules committee. Hence now, we have members rejecting every motion. He said, you used to work very well. I think, Michael, you used to work very well. Yeah. They regulated this thing. Mm-hmm. You know when you go to the chamber, which one you accept here, which one you reject here. They were very easy. Until you change the decision. I was saying that change the decision because you are still a whip party talk. And therefore, the whip party took a decision that 10 things around. Then if you want to go back to what used to happen, you should go to that one. If there's no need for this motion, we should have to. And I'm not sure how you then express the condolences. Maybe you can find something to express condolences to other members.
I just want to point out that if you do away with this, the issue becomes the ability of Parliament to respond immediately. Because if you give notice of a motion, the program committee sits every Thursday. And the people be able to schedule motions if they think it's appropriate, or they could have some kind of system where they say they schedule the committee motion, the motion. And then get present on the order bank for the decision of the House. So basically you have a week's delay. So the decision is actually one of, can you accept the week's delay in terms of programming an important motion that you think should be conveyed now? And I think, you obviously have to stipulate what the nature of such motion is, and then the party should confront.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, but
as
we noticed, don't feel bad. First of all, I just want to say whoever was the author of the document that served before Parliament 24th of October 2014 really didn't know the implications of what they were in fact putting before Parliament. It really made it compulsory for a presiding officer to allow a member to read motions. They have absolutely no say. Yes, it says that the motion must comply with the following, but whoever ignored that, the presiding officer was still compelled to allow that member. It says here, will allow a member to read the motion. So let us agree that this was absolutely not thought through. So, we want to revert back to the practice. That was when there was still also room for unwritten rules of common decency, that people could communicate by email. We communicated motions without notice for years, without any problems. And in fact, sometimes another party whip would say, listen, if you change that word or whatever, then we will agree. So we had such a arrangement in Parliament before. Now, unfortunately, we now have to go back and to say, are these rules that we have before going to put us back where we were? And I think to a certain extent, yes. I just feel that within the C2C, motions without notice must be confined to national issues. Within that, you can still turn a used bus. Matters that relate to issues that Parliament, in other words, we will have to in fact detail that even further. And I think I would agree, I think it was Deirdre who said, we should have specifically, must not be possibly political, because a certain trend or bad habit has not been established. And people, quite frankly, either they abuse motions without notice, or they simply put, and they want to extend member statement time, or it's a deliberate attempt to just derail Parliament. So, whatever, the fact is, I don't agree with the notion that we should do away with it. A Parliament should have that ability to respond. But now we come to the very important provision that we have here, and that is the number of motions without notice on any sitting day, the period of time with which such motions must be completed, and the sequence of participation must be determined. Now, I hear what the other is saying. We can probably pull the record, the previous parliament, to say how many, Peter can maybe just give us a guesstimate, how many such motions without notice were moved in the past? Were there more than 10? How? Not really, not that I can recall, because I remember there was always a competition between the ANC and the DA to first be in with a motion without notice to congratulate or whatever, or to express condolence on a tragedy. First in Monday morning, it would rain in. And then once a party has submitted, there's a general respect that others won't move on the same one. So now we have to build all of this in the rules. I just feel fair that we will have to still just go into a little bit additional detail. I know you are not very happy with details, but we must identify opportunities where it could be abused. So I don't suggest that we must write many more. I think it's just here and there that we need to toughen up. Thank you.
Okay. Now, first question, I think I put a question to the council on studying the issues answers and then discussing. You can answer it. Initially, motions without notice related to national interest and only in extraordinary circumstances that children die and all of that, then we will claim to the such. Now, just to pick up on Julie's point, the ANC has a tendency to submit 10 motions of our voters on Sunday. So they grab the space on Monday morning, right? And then they decide which one they're going to be on Tuesday and the Thursday. No problem with that. We also have space. But, you know, as you said, there has to be a procedure to check. Two values are to check. And I think the strategy is to say, we have a few favors, we don't want to say one. We talk about strategies to each other. On the page on B, right? D2, D3. If the proposed motion complies with a specified criteria, the House Secretary must circulate. Now, what's that? What's the House Secretary? We either have the LA Chamber doing it, or the Secretary from the LA Chamber doing it, but I don't know what I'm talking about. Then, under note, if I suggested the members be given not more than 60 seconds, I'd like 90 seconds. You know, a motion with notice can be done in 60 seconds. But a motion without notice, especially a condolence motion, can be done. So I'd like it to be as mentioned. Okay? I think the DA is going to take a considered view about the threshold we discussed this morning, and we are still considering the matter. So we won't say yes or nay on it. And then to get to, you know, DA, I don't have a problem with decisions reached in the chief of staff and it being brought to that. Sometimes things happen and you need a particular body to just constitute and do crisis management, which is what we did. It was crisis management until session after one. And actually have no problem reporting to crisis management, otherwise the decorum and the house just fails completely.
Just a couple to handle the question. But the main reason why they wish had that decision was that all motions that were presented were rejected by one party. I'm not underlying it, but the main reason why they wish that if you put them for everyone to read it, it can be rejected by half. But now we know that it's just one of the few.
Only
one. It's not workable for all parties, luckily. But also it's not workable for members that to read it in their house, the way they're doing it. That's why the Whip Party came with that proposal. Because 2009, June, you wouldn't be a whip at the time. You calculated all these motions, everyone was capable. The proposal we made that will support your motion if you change this way. It used to work very well. And then 2014 it changed because one party rejected all of them. They party met and say, man, they're in dilemma. What to do? We get rid of this or we find a way. Then they took a decision that they persuaded the rules coming to accept this one that we were raising. That will assist us then allow a member to read it to be rejected by the chamber. But we know now that even if it's read by a member, it's no longer a motion without notice. It's a podcast statement of standing purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Not standing the table. Then what we do, if you retain it, you must take the old way of doing things. If we don't do that, we'll continue the way it is now. That's why then the best thing anyway is to get rid of it. The sky won't fall in. And I take the point that parents raised that what happened is something bad happened. Suddenly, I think there will always be a mechanism of doing that in Parliament.
Chair, could I respond to a couple of points and misunderstandings as well? Historically, by the way, until about certain mornings in Ireland in 2006, motions without notes were not abused. There were one, two, maybe three per week. And they had to do with the demise of a sitting member of parliament or some dramatic event. It didn't even extend to condolences to all kinds of people dying in constituencies in every way because on what basis do you select which ones you're going to bring to parliament? That's a sensitive issue. I'm not sure that members always realize the extent to which members of the public may feel offended by the fact that their loved ones are not recognized in that way in parliament to others are. So I think one needs to be cautious and err on the side of having fewer rather than more motions of condolence, for instance. And the same for congratulatory. You congratulate one achievement and not another one. The basketball is not recognized, the swimming medal is. So that's just historically, this was not abused. It was not an issue of member statements. It has become so, and it's because of that these rules are being considered. Just in passing the references to the NA table, Ms. Gullion, the NA table, from my experience, has no authority whatsoever. The authority rests, if anything, in this context with the Secretary of Parliament, and it was agreed recently amongst parties that we should specify Secretary to the National Assembly.
The House.
So and that's the House Secretary. And that would be...
Well,
I put it in. I've been told to go right to the rules and put in House Secretary wherever that is more appropriate designation.
Remember, we discussed on Friday.
Yeah, but you know, do you check? We can just find it a bit of a house, a town house.
It's Secretary to the National Assembly.
I don't think the Secretary to Parliament and the Secretary of NHL.
Correct.
Mm-mm. House Secretary.
Okay. It is a common terminology used because we have two houses of parliament. But otherwise you should perhaps consider the assembly secretary. That the shortness, the assembly secretary. So that we differentiate between the secretary of parliament and the particular house which is the assembly.
This is the first time that I've actually had to make this decision, and I was going to propose that we put in the definition of House Secretary is Secretary to the National Assembly. The formal title of this person is Secretary to the National Assembly.
Yeah, I didn't
so if you have a problem with the sense of House Secretary, then we would avoid that and just put Secretary to the National Assembly. The time limits have come up again. Secretary to the NAC. The time limits suggested that that should be 60 seconds or 90 seconds. The table will effectively rule out any of them going to be that long, because any motion without notice for that long, it's a long time. If you put a minute of speech down from table, that's a long speech, that's a long motion. So those would routinely be ruled out of order on the basis that they are member statements and not a serious proposal for the House to take a decision on them. and they would be ruled out for being too lengthy, for being argumentative, for introducing arguments and motivations, all kinds of stuff which don't belong in the resolutions. So I think the majority would in any case be ruled out. When it comes to condolence, of course they are inclined to be a bit longer, but even condolence motions seldom are a minute long, honestly. But one can allow some leeway there. The keyword scoring issue is an interesting one. It's true that it's a consultative body. It is also true that the chief of forum is an opportunity for the parties to reach agreement on certain political issues on the way of our functions. But it has to be emphasized, and I think we need to do that because historically this is, I'm aware of problems there, is that the rules cannot be circumvented by a decision among parties. And that's what was happening. The chief of forum would take a decision on a best practice, which would conflict in fact with the rules. And then it established itself as an unwritten rule in conflict with written rules. And that was a serious problem that was arising. So I should be cautious on the conflicts. I'm confident that with these criteria, and Julia's talking about tightening them up, that if these are applied rigorously by the staff, and they're doing so on the authority of the CP, not their own authority, if these are applied rigorously, we're going to reduce the problem of abuse by 90% at least, possibly more. And it will bring the National Assembly back, I think, to a realization of what this thing was, this mechanism was meant for, and it will hopefully resume its original intention.
Okay, but Kasper, there must be someone who will say, I've received a motion without notice. I think it's not qualifying because of it's not in line with the criteria. Because the whole issue is that the point that you are raising, don't disallow it, but control it in a manner that is appropriate to the dignity of the House. If you do that, you need one person to take that decision. Because if they're still going to hate it, then you stand up there, Speaker, please, you're out of order, will be worse than getting rid of it. And we should find a way where it can be submitted. And then when they hold the table there says, no, this one qualifies in terms of the criteria, then can be read. But if he doesn't, they should be told that no, yours is not, that's why you can't be read in the chamber. The presiding officer notify about all that. Unless we do that, we are not going to win this thing. Then going to cause problems.
I think that the rule is intending to do just that.
Okay.
What happens is that the motions are circulated and the table also receives copies.
Yeah.
The table gets, that is by 10 o'clock it has received.
Yeah.
The table bets in those that are not, that are in conflict with the criteria will be sent back or the men will be notified. This is in conflict. There will be no opportunity to then amend on the same day and still get it. If it is in conflict, you have to wait for the next occasion when you can move. What the speaker will then get will be a list of those that are in order.
Yeah.
And that will also be circulated to parties. That will be half hour before the House starts sitting. The Speaker will have a list of all those that meet the criteria. And the Speaker, that can be circulated, as I say, to parties as well. So that there's no uncertainty about that.
Then, yeah.
Sir, there's one thing. 2D4 speaks to a second qualifying criteria that at least five parties have to also approve. So it gets verified by the table.
Yeah.
If it doesn't comply, it doesn't get circulated to parties.
Yeah.
And then there's a second stage that parties have to comply, and then it will only go through.
Can I just clarify? So first of all those that don't meet the criteria don't happen on the day.
Mm-hmm.
Those that do meet the criteria, that's circulated to all parties. Parties are informed, and parties can then object. If five parties object to any one of those, then the opportunity to read that out also disappears.
But maybe that's what we should do then, get rid of objection that you have. Because if you make a proposal of a motion without notice, you take it to the table, is a 10 or 9, the table comes back to the but this one doesn't qualify. And then it's rejected already.
Mm-hmm.
Then you don't need parties to do so again, because you will face a similar situation and we might reject all of them, even they are qualified in terms of the
rejection is a different one. The not meeting the criteria is, in other words, that the motion is out of order.
It's out of order.
The objection by a party is objection to being presented to the House without notice. So if the House, if a party feels we should not be called upon to take a decision on this without notice, then they will object to that. And that could be on the basis of political sensitivities, for instance. So that would be a second reason for shooting down. First is criteria not met. Second is political concerns.
Practically, this now happens. You have 5 parties support. You read your motion without notice. In the House, there's an objection raised. What happens then? If they want to address the Speaker and explain why they are objecting, etc., etc., and now call a division or whatever, how are we going, are we not going to, is it not necessary for us to say that your threshold of 5 parties makes it, makes other members, makes it not possible for other members to object? You know, what I'm just saying is, how are we going to balance that? Because clearly that is another possibility.
My view, Kasma, remove the threshold completely. Once the chairman have accepted that your motion is not disqualified, you read it there. You read it there in the chamber. Because if, again, other party then have to take a decision whether this one should be read or not, I think the threshold is about, do we agree in the chamber? Because once you have moved that motion, it becomes the decision of the chamber. We may find that people are raising motion without notice. Other parties are not comfortable. I think the threshold is about that. It qualifies in terms of the criteria, but parties feel the politics is wrong. And then they have to cover on that. The 5 parties is meant for that purpose.
Mm.
But because once it's passed there, it's our decision all of us. You may find that people are congratulating the one dictator somewhere. And then to them, it's not a dictator, it's their leader. On our side, it's a dictator. And then to be forced to say that we have agreed with it automatically is a problem.
I think the purpose, I must emphasize that these 5 parties must have no objection. Not 5 objecting, it's 5 having no objection. So the reason for this hurdle is to avoid politically contentious issues being pushed before the House for a decision without notice. So if 5 parties, including the majority party and the largest opposition party, say we have no objection to without notice, then that's a kind of filter which satisfies the need for avoiding politically contentious matters. If the scenario arises that Ms. Killian is mentioning, that the member then crosses all of those hurdles, gives notice, or moves without notice in the House, and another member of some party objects to the without notice, the presiding officer will say, this motion has met all the requirements, and I'm going to put it to the House for a decision.
Okay.
And then the division can take place, and as I've indicated last time, you can also move amendments to these things. They're not in any way protected from amendments. So it really is to try and avoid politically contentious issues creeping through, and this mechanism being used for those.
Yes.
My question relates to the decision-making criteria that is contained in Section 2.3. What is the contingency that staff of Parliament, those who work at the MA table, is really going to mitigate before even regulations are published? I think actually that is maybe a little bit of a bad idea. On paragraph 4, on paragraph 5, 6, and 7, somebody has to exercise their decision. And whoever is going to be at the interview says the information is not going to be allowed any further, even to be circulated for, and decided on by the court, 5 parties support, that is going to be a grant of a lot of freedom. I'm not entirely
I think the reason why this is worded like this, and maybe it should be rethought, the staff have no authority of their own to shoot down these things, except on technical grounds. And when they take that decision on technical grounds, there is an understanding that the member may appeal to the Speaker. But the problem is that within the time limits that are available on any sitting day, there wouldn't be time for the member to go to the Speaker, the Speaker to review, and so on, and still to get that on the order for the day. That's a concern.
Thank you.
I agree with that, and it should be purely technical. But technically speaking, what is uncovering in the sense of expression? I may argue, or as an employee of the NHS, I might decide that this is offensive and can become as contained in this motion. But the person who wants to use the motion is going to argue that that is not actually unbecoming and offensive. We really have that kind of debate that are treated in France, but not what we are doing. We are cascading that down to the NHS and employees.
This is what my qualification. It could also mean that there is a limiting freedom of expression, the freedom of speech, the way to do it. We understand the principle guidance and we understand the objective, but it could well be limiting. And the other thing is, we ever consider that objective, and we're not holding any rationality between the objective criteria. And that's the problem is further compounded by the requirement that applies to the different parties in support it, because even those eyes for the different parties are not asked to the and so in fact five political parties would in fact almost cannot
But what is your proposal?
I thought they come here to assist us. No, they're not.
You want to clarify?
Yeah, I want to clarify that where we're coming from is that if one member objected, then that would not proceed. And the objection is to without notice. You cannot ambush any single member to take a decision without prior notice. And so this would all have got one member objecting. That has now been broadened to allow more through than would otherwise have gone through. I understand that at the moment, one party in particular routinely objects to any motion without notice as a kind of structured mechanism. So that's what this is about. I don't know if we're going to freedom of speech in this context. I'm not sure.
Julie?
Anybody
follow?
Can I just say, I think this is, well, first of all, I just want to say, I was really expecting the State Audit Riley to come and help us and not to come and complicate our problems. But just to say that we must bear in mind that freedom of expression is not unlimited, and certainly not in the House. And I mean, it's, you know, if you look at the practices that we've established over years, we have a list of unparliamentary expressions, etc., that have been brought over, and like other parliaments in the world, it builds up a body of acceptable practice and conduct and expression. So I think there already is something that they can refer to. Secondly, as Cutler has indicated, we must try to create reasonableness to make it possible and to not just say, this is too complicated, let's just accept. So that is why we want to create a sort of a threshold to avoid ganging up of parties, to make sure that small parties can't just come together and say some other, you know, and on the other hand, the ANC can't bully it through. I mean, it's trying to get a broader consensus about what the national issues are. Because as Parliament, we must express views that are not party political in nature when it comes to these matters. So that is the background, how we want to compile and to say certain issues are technical in nature because we have a body of what is acceptable, we have a guide to procedure, we have updated records, etc. So we have all of that, which guides the officials. But then in the end, there's also political scrutiny by the parties that will support broadly what is contained in the motion.
Thank you. I'm sorry that the meeting has been a little obstructed.
No. She was just pulling your leg. Feel at home and enjoy the discussion.
But in fact, you have to do so. You see, you add into one, which is must be consistent with constitution to lower the rule. In order for me, I think we could treat that to incorporate the one section which you mentioned, and that is that the body of constitutional has been brought up. So maybe we add that to one, and then we leave 4, 5, 6, and 7, because you have a sort of screening mechanism in the inclusion of the I make it people even to the 541, but he is a very initial even chance to consider and it will be very subject to. I don't want to mention that, but because you mentioned Malema, for example, the 540s in Malema and this guy, we didn't like the motion. I'm just using your example. And so there, we could fix it, and we're not being disrupted to make this meeting at all. But very much it was just under constitution, the law, the reason, and the pieces that we established by point, by the law, were that, and then you leave 4, 5, 6, and 7. And the same way, and from our side, from a constitutional point of view, we'd be being comfortable.
Okay. That's important because we may end up in court with this.
I appreciate the response from the legal advisors on this one. I recall that we had one case where there were floods in Bangladesh and the member without notice moved in the house at the time. That the house expresses its condolence to the people of Bangladesh who lost their lives and property, and that the house will contribute financially to the people of Bangladesh. That was put before the House without prior notice, no objection, agreed to. And only afterwards, I brought to the attention of the government, we can't do this, it's beyond our mandate as Parliament. And they realized that we can't do it, in fact, and it had to be rescinded, it had to be So you have to try and avoid that kind of embarrassment happening in Parliament through individual members moving motions with the best intentions that are, in fact, unconstitutional.
I was just going to say, I think the criteria is quite important. You know, we're also working and sitting and listening to people. We know about the unspoken rules. And I also want to say to you, if we are not going to put the rule in the criteria to say that it's got to be of national interest, and maybe not national importance, but national interest, and second to that, it's going to be non-political and non-racial. It will continue. I'm already sitting here looking at loopholes of how they will continue, and I can tell you they will continue, or whoever will continue.
Yes, thank you very much. Do you want to make that point?
Of national interest.
I don't know.
It sounds very nice, but I just want to caution. You see, it is a late issue. It starts at 10 o'clock. Parties and their whips are occupied in committees of parliament. Practically, it's very difficult. I mean, smaller parties, for instance, there they already said, it's difficult for them. In fact, that's why we wanted to bring in the NA table, to take responsibility for distribution, because it's submitted to the NA table, and in many other respects, our rules have written in to them the role of the NA table. And anybody who is not satisfied with whatever can always make an appeal to the speaker or can submit the issue to the rules committee or whatever. So I think, practically speaking, I'm concerned if we write them out for the smaller parties, it's just going to become impossible to participate and to, in fact, also have an opportunity to submit issues and in fact, agree or disagree with what is done by Parliament.
Just to add, I mean, if you just look at the people that will have the manpower and the resources will be a maximum of 3 to 4 parties.
Yeah.
So there will be absolutely no motives, you know, even of national importance.
That's what you want, isn't it?
we want them. But
that's what they want. That's
what you want.
That's what they want.
Can I just make the point, emphasize the point that the table staff have absolutely no authority and no responsibility in this regard at all. The people who have the authority and the responsibility are the presiding officers. They are the ones who implement the rules. They are the ones who protect the rights of members to participate and how they may participate to protect the house and so on. But when it comes, for instance, to questions, there's a whole range of different criteria which questions have to comply with. But there's more time for them to be considered. In strictly speaking, they're considered and approved and not approved by the speaker. But in practical terms, it goes to the staff. The staff make an input, and when they send out their advice to members, they're doing so in the name of, under the authority of the speaker. And if the member has a problem, the member doesn't come to the staff member and argue with the staff member, the member goes to the speaker. So the staff are merely accepting some of the responsibility, which is the responsibility, must be the responsibility of the presiding officers only, and of assisting the presiding officers to implement the rules. So they have no further, you know, responsibility of their own board.
Thank you, Chief Justice. You see, the way he read it at the moment, it is the following. The following requirement has to be administered to the Secretary of the National Assembly, those meetings are required of ideas, and change from what is important, and it can be a common dispute. And then the Secretary must stipulate the order to take the proposed motion to comply with the specified criteria. Now, there's nothing in the proposed rule which specifies how the Secretary must consider that, so it's a subjective view that we have. So the Secretary would have to be in the statement which is also the location of the problem, and not in the statement of whether it's not going to be proceeded, but it's going to be having to leave the issue. But then, of course, the Secretary doesn't need to distribute it. And that's why I think there needs to be some expectations. And so it appears to me that if the staff will handle from comfort fields and other policy skills, that the criteria are important to find, but it really seems that he needs to be treated so that to make certain that he can't be subject to the reason to be not received. You see, the sympathy has to be objective, has to apply rationality, has to be reasonable in the decision the sympathy makes to bear in mind. The Secretary actually has to make the decision. If the Secretary decides whether that motion is actually going to go ahead or not. You see, because the Secretary must, the member must take the text of the motion to the Secretary, the proposed motion complies, and if the proposed motion complies with the criteria, the House Secretary must circulate. Not the member of the Secretary, that responsibility is given to the House Secretary, and gets the indicated earlier in response to discussion that it's the national team. So that doesn't play a very important role. That person is actually the gatekeeper. And yet we are saying that the motion must be consistent with the Constitution and the law and reason, and in dealing with it, the decision that the system must also be consistent with the Constitution and the law and reason. And that's all we're saying. Mm. And so I think we can accommodate, keep the criteria, but the problem is related to how the Secretary arrives at the decision as an entity.
Well, maybe you should propose that the NYU can also assist with any distraction. Two options that you have put into the rules committee. Please, this is what you are proposing to you and the rules committee to consider. Failure to do so, we reject the offer. Rejection is one of the options. If we think that this one will be accepted by the rules committee, this is our first option. If they say that this is wrong, surely we must reject it because they have applied our mind. Yeah. We can't continue to discuss this forever.
Yeah.
And then we should solve it if the rules committee is for sure. They may also improve on it, I think. Because you shouldn't deny members the right anyway to that case too. But also you should allow members to abuse the rules of National Assembly. That's a kind of balance. The same 12 control at the same time democracy. And then we have to balance the two is very important for us to do. I think if there are issues at the end of not so fast, we can present it to us. We'll be a good idea. Put it there, tighter. I mean, because the last thing we did was the second to call. It's very hard. Therefore, we must also ensure that we tighten that. This is what you are going to propose to the Rules Committee. If the Rules Committee accepts it well and good, but if they don't accept it, sure, you should get it.
Yep.
Would have tried really to deal with it. But I think the Rules Committee, they may accept it well. Because you must install the rules also for the party here. May not be there in 2019, may not be here. And we will touch the land generally. Can come in large numbers, fight it down the land you have. And therefore, I think we can balance the time. Would be a preferred way of putting it, the way you are proposing it. But the rules calling to find also some gaps on it to try to that to pass. If they think that no, this thing doesn't have any decision to make by the rules calling. But whatever point that Emma also wants to propose, I think I will have. Can we have it tomorrow or later?
Yes.
According to tomorrow, that is what you are going to propose. I think we refer colleagues to break for 10 minutes after this difficult one. If you accepted my proposal, I reject this good enough. I lost it. Now we are exhausted. It was an anti-democratic one. Thank you very much. Let us take 10 minutes for this.
Thank you.
cause this is really doubtful. So you have to see half in fact that if you're going to go in. Not necessarily. You would have to bring about the evidence that he himself involved himself and allowed him to use for money and for his own benefit and not necessarily for all of them. The link to him as well is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, Thank you. on each, I think we'll present it for consideration.
President Kashford will relook at it again. And to just remove another president, really, there's no impeachment in our constitution as far as I know. There's removal of the president. The president allowed it should be correct, is removal of the president. The reason why I expected to deal with this matter, there's already a debate in the House. I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago when we debated this removal of the president. The motion was presented by the leader of the opposition. And therefore, there were no guidelines at the time. I think the speaker took a political decision to say that I approve this for discussing purposes. But I do think that we must, instead of the speaker, have to take decision on something that are very, very, sometimes are very controversial, very difficult to decide. But we really thank the speaker that has taken a decision for us. And therefore, we have to deal with it now, try to see what we want to propose for the removal of the president. There are two areas there, is 89. The issue of vote of no confidence, we have dealt with that one. The court also assisted us to deal with the question of vote of no confidence. Of course, we may be not heard about some of the issues there, but the court has decided on it. We are happy to take it through. The removal of the president is an issue that we must really consider very seriously. On Friday, there was a real discussion about this. That is a very complex legal issue, first and foremost. That is very complex. It's not a vote of no confidence. When you sit down, you don't like me politically, then you move a vote of no confidence. This one is much more detailed, much more complex. Therefore, we must apply our mind to assist the speaker as much as we try to assist. Pastor?
Thank you, Chair. I have revised the document that was looked at on Friday, specifically also to provide clear and specific guidelines with which the Speaker would approach any such request. So if I can take you through again the document, the one day to 15 September, I just added there section 89 sub 2, which just emphasizes how serious the removal of the President is. If he's removed in terms of 89.1 A or B, which is serious violation of constitutional law or serious misconduct. In both of those cases, the removal on both of those grounds would lead to the president being removed from office and may not receive any benefits of that office and may not serve in any public office afterwards. So there are very serious consequences to such a removal, as are contained in 89 sub 2. I indicated that the relevant issues, I think impeachment is an American concept. It is useful to bring it in into South Africa. It's the removal of the president from office. But I think the Constitution doesn't talk about impeachment, and it may be better not to go there at all. And I indicated that there have to be very specific grounds relating to removal from office, and that you would then require two processes. Given that the grounds relate to the seriousness of the violation or the seriousness of the misconduct, it seems to me that you couldn't simply bring a motion to the House for the removal of the President without referring it to a committee for detailed consideration. How would the House in a debate decide this is serious enough to warrant removal? So I think it would be inevitable and necessary in all cases to refer it to a committee. And that would be the first step, that referral to a committee, which would be a motion to refer the charges to a committee, and that motion would not be the so-called impeachment motion. It would be an ordinary motion like any other motion before the National Assembly. Do refer this to a committee. To which committee do we refer it? You require one third of members to be present, and the majority of those supporting it would send it to the relevant committee. And I'll make a point again about the necessity to take less attention to the issue of the seriousness and how do you assess seriousness. So my proposals then, starting on page 2, first of all, in sub 1, I give you the general guidelines with which such a motion, which in fact any motion must comply. That's A to G, they are the common ones, must be consistent with constitution, law and rules, must deal with only one substantive matter, must be clear and distinct, etc. Those are the standard ones applicable to all motions. Then sub 2, I deal with the ones that are specific to this request to proposal to refer this to a committee. The motion must be limited to a clearly formulated and proper substantiated charge that in the opinion of the Speaker, prima facie warrants consideration by the House. That's the first one. It must deal specifically with such charges. it must propose that the specified charge be referred to a committee. The charge must be confined to a charge contemplated in Section 89. In other words, it must be a violation of the law or a serious conduct issue. And then B, the charge must relate to an action or conduct by the President in person, and not the President in his capacity as head of the executive, anything like that. It must be misconduct by the person, it must be a violation by the person of the constitutional law. That's in any case my view of it. And then I've added here, because there seems to be some concern about what prima facie evidence could mean. The Black's Law Dictionary, I'm not sure how highly that is regarded by the legal fraternity, but it seems to be, to give you a clear perspective on what prima facie evidence is. It is that at first sight, it is on the first appearance or on the face of it, and then goes on, a litigating party is said to have a prima facie case when the evidence in his favour, stick in his favour, is sufficiently strong for his opponent to be called on to answer it. A prima facie case then is one which is established by sufficient evidence and can be overthrown only by rebutting evidence adduced on the other side. So that tends to clarify what is meant by prima facie evidence. The speaker is always going to have a challenge when assessing the evidence that's provided, whether it qualifies as prima facie evidence, and will inevitably come under a lot of pressure if the speaker disallows. And I just have to point in passing here that allegations in the media do not constitute prima facie evidence in themselves. Before I get to the programming issue, I just should just sketch two scenarios to give an indication of the way I think it would unpack. The one is where there's a court finding, a court judgment that the President has violated the law or has acted against the law. You already have a court that is committed misconduct, which may or may not involve prison sentences and whatever else. In that case, the prima facie evidence is already there. There's no issue with that. The speaker going to recognize that is prima facie, refer it to a committee. The committee may wish to look at seriousness. But that is a clear-cut case. Far less clear-cut, and I'm just sketching a scenario here, when I'm not looking at current incumbents or anything like that. The President is at a party where they're all celebrating, and the President, amongst others, gets slightly tipsy. Somebody then provokes him. The President loses his cool, and grabs a bottle and lashes out at the one who's doing the provoking. Assaults, in other words, another person at the party. That person ends up in hospital having to be treated, but the person says, I'm not going to lay charges, because it's the President after all. But if other witnesses land these days have all cell phones and they take photographs of the event, and there's a record of the hospital receiving and treating this person. So the motion is brought to the House to investigate whether this conduct is misconduct of the President should lead to the President's removal from office. It may be then, I think, would be that the photographs of the event and the record of the hospital would be sufficient to bring about the evidence of conduct that needs to be questioned. It would then go to the committee, and how the committee would proceed is something I'll come back to. It's very unclear on what the committee could, would, and should do. But just before we then get to committee issues, the programming one. It is such a serious concern, such a serious proposal to remove the President from office on specified factual grounds, that it seems to me that if no confidence has a measure of urgency attached to it, Section 89 must have a greater measure of urgency attached to it. And I would therefore propose that, as option one, the Speaker must ensure, if the motion meets criteria, must ensure that the motion is scheduled and voted on within a reasonable period of time, given the program of the Assembly. That's the one that applies in no confidence. If you want to see it as more serious than that, and more urgent, then option two would be that the motion in terms of Section 89, approved by the Speaker, must be programmed for consideration on the next sitting day of the House, or, if the House is not due to sit for a period of more than 14 days, the Speaker may, one, appoint an ad hoc committee in terms of Rule 214 to consider the charges, or two, convene a special meeting of the House without delay to consider the motion. Those are options that I've put before you. It's a matter of how urgent one should consider any such motion. Importantly, and this is based to some extent also on what happened recently, And it would, I think, be necessary to emphasize that the motion to refer charges to a committee, when that comes before the House, that should not lead to a debate on those charges. You're asking the committee to investigate. So you shouldn't preempt what the committee is going to do. And the motion, the debate should be limited to, are we or are we not going to refer this to a committee? What should the committee look like? What kind of time frame should be given? And so on. The motion to refer to such an issue to a committee is not an impeachment motion, and the debate should not be about impeachment and about the preferred charges. The process in committee I'm not real clear on. Of course, there's the process that you see in the UA, which is a very elaborate process. It's a judicial, semi-judicial process. Clearly, what the committee's terms of reference would be to investigate and make a determination of the charges. It would be if the charges are proved, to determine their seriousness. And then thirdly, to make a recommendation to the House in terms of Section 89. In essence, that would be what the committee would be required to do. Depending very much on the circumstances, on the nature of the charges, on the amount of evidence being made available and so on, the committee may need to engage in a quasi-judicial exercise of determining guilt and so on. But I express a word of caution here that I think this committee and any other committee should err on the side of not presuming to take on judicial functions, court functions. It should respect that there is another arm of government that does that. And wherever possible, the committee should err on the side of recommending to the House that these charges be referred to the NPA for proper judicial investigation or an outcome in the courts. But if that's not possible, and sometimes it wouldn't be possible, then the committee would need to look at the process of hearings, allowing the President to be heard in his or her defense, and so on, in line with the Powers and Privileges Committee and in line with the Ethics Committee at the moment. So that kind of process would be followed. That's it. That's right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pastor. He has captured the whole discussion that we had on Friday. And the new area that you are dealing with, there's no precedent, as far as I know, in South Africa, with the removal of the sitting president. And this is what we should raise. Is there any other new ideas from what we have discussed on Friday? Enver, any further one for me?
I think
Captain is the other one. Sandy?
Just a point of clarity on the committee that we would expect, obviously, to be an ad hoc committee. There seems to have been some way that we were thinking that maybe a person outside of Parliament should chair it. I just want to know, I mean, we don't have a committee, I don't know if ad hoc committee means, and cover the work of the committee.
Can I just respond?
Okay.
My initial response is with the need to be different in more detail, but this is a function that's imposed on the National Assembly. Any external person would not be a member of the National Assembly, would not have the constitutional accountability and responsibility, and that would create a problem for me right away. So, unless you then, I think you'd have a constitutional problem to start with.
A committee of members of National Assembly is appointed to deal with the matter. Only members of National Assembly would do so. And I think the point that is raised that National Assembly is not a court. Is a political body. By and large, anyway, very objective and successive. Because it's a political body, not a legal court, and therefore it's a very complex exercise that you want us to discuss. I'm not sure why you can even consider this matter. But of course, it's fair to us by the Speaker, we must consider if they make some proposals. Because it's much more difficult. It's not like the way when Anthony is angry with the President, he didn't move a motion of no confidence. Because that is politics in general. Then you can grandstand on politics and talk about everything under the sun, but this one is much more complex. And therefore, we must just work on it and see the new ideas. We must look at those new ideas. We have to present that to the Speaker to consider. It refers to us for that purpose. We must put it in our rules if we do agree the promotion of confidence, promotion of removal of the president, all those matters will be there. But we must be clear about what exactly we mean about this.
If I could, I would like to just put it where I read that a senior advocate who is not an MP should chair the discipline.
That's a proposal. Yeah. No, this is not harm at all. You mustn't apologize for making a call. Of course, it must be democratic. No apology. There's no interest in doing that. Julie, what do you want to do? We had a long discussion on Friday of this matter. And Kappa then went out to draft it accordingly. Advocate changes. Are your nine as well on Friday? They are wrong now. Don't forget that you're going to defend us in court. And then if you are not convinced, then we'll lose the case. We'll lose the case. Yeah.
Yes, we are fine. Jefferson, a thought. We have not received any research done on what our parliament are doing specifically as far as this is concerned, and I think that would be very interesting. Secondly, you know, we have found that in the previous period, when we considered Rule 102, that is before the House, one of the very serious weaknesses that we find ourselves is that we could not politically agree how to process that. And I think this time round we should get it right. For instance, in most parliaments there would be some or other threshold or whatever, reasonable threshold. No, let's say a third or whatever. I mean, sort of not making it impossible. But I think it is important for us to just consider that, because that is one of the weaknesses of our Rule 102 at present. Although this is a political motion on 102, the Section 89 is a very serious matter. And therefore, we have very serious prima facie evidence, etc., 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 but at least it should not be just for one party, a small party. Well, I think there should be a broader approach to that. And I was just wondering if we could perhaps just have some research, and by when will we have it formally tabled on that?
In relation to that, I just refer you to a note that I have on page 3 of my document. I was concerned that if the prima facie requirements are met, and the Speaker therefore allows it, so objective will grant the Speaker would disallow. It's an objective test. If the Speaker finds that the prima facie requirements are met, and therefore the motion can be put before the House, I think, and I would appreciate an input from the legal advisors on this, would it be constitutional for the House, for the majority party, to vote against pursuing the matter any further? Would it be constitutional for the majority party to vote against the motion to refer it to a committee? Or should that impeachment process, that discussion in the committee, happen at all costs? And that's a concern I have. You know, if, in other words, if you take a simple example there, you've got a court finding against the president. So the prima facie case is there. Would it be possibly, would it be politically okay for the majority party, as the majority in parliament, to decide we're not going to take any steps against the president despite these findings by the court? I'm asking that question. So it may be that if the prima facie case is met, that the motion should still go to the House in terms of the nature of the committee and the time frames for the committee and all of that to be decided on, but not to vote against the matter being referred to the committee. I'm first of all not sure.
Yeah. Just for information. Can I just ask a question?
Okay.
I was actually under the impression that there would be a committee to consider to make sure that it is not only the Speaker, that there would in fact be a committee that would consider the seriousness, etc., and then to say that they recommend to the House that the proper committee be appointed to investigate further, but that there is an initial additional scrutiny, multi-party body, to consider that. That was my understanding, but in part of the document here.
Okay, now you are proposing a new idea. that is, even before the motion is considered to go to their house, some form of a municipality sit down with the speaker and discuss it. If themselves they agree that, you know, there's two parties, therefore it's presented to the chairman of the state. And then set up in a committee to look at the charges and everything.
Okay. The immediate concern would be that such a party mechanism would be a political process, whereas the speaker is required to engage in a technical process. So if you're immediately doing something there that could be very
political.
No, the point is a good point, that to consider all options. Everybody are fine with the way we are phrasing. In terms of the language, the politics is more complex for us.
Could be an ad hoc committee, but its task would always be to investigate the grounds of impeachment, and not to, to do what the speaker has already done, which is to say, okay, prima facie evidence is because that would not be for the committee to do.
And then you talk about
The option two is if the House is in recess, and then the speaker has the authority at the moment to appoint an ad hoc committee, but only an ad hoc committee.
The matter is too serious, and you must remove the president should be sitting on the House. There should be an ad hoc committee. Whether we are sitting or not sitting, they must be sitting on the House take a decision based on the prima facie evidence that is there, if the speaker so decides, based on the real issues. Because it's not just political issues that are subjective, should be real evidence. Then the committee can be set up. But the House, I think, is very important. There should be other committees set up for an advisory committee.
Okay, so that's it.
Okay, so just,
okay.
The motion is to before the House.
Yeah.
And then the speaker.
The member presents the motion
to
the speaker.
The
speaker can look at all available information, evidence. If he's convinced that there's prima facie, then he's taken to the House. The House then sets up the question.
I think the current process could apply. A member who thinks that there are grounds for impeachment could give notice to the House. The Speaker then subsequently has to approve the motion, would say, no, there's no prima facie evidence. That's the one way. Then the member would get some publicity that way, which may or may not be fortunate. The alternative would be, and this is one that can be imposed by the rules, that the member would have to, first of all, alert the Speaker, and the Speaker would give the member an opportunity to give notice.
My view, suppose we have exactly the situation you are having, emotion without notice. When every member stands up there, that's them standing politically on something that has no prima facie. A member must present it to the speaker office, that the motion is not noticed. The speaker look at this. The speaker is convinced that there's prima facie issue evidence. Then the member can then take to the House in order for the House to establish a subcommittee, whatever committee, to deal with the evidence presented. Because in other way, it would be a bigger problem. Because I can just say that my interest is not even to have a call because there's no evidence. And that's saying I need a small thing, it can't be like that.
But the other question I had was, maybe prima facie should be defined in definitions. And you can follow very similar kind of definition, maybe make it shorter.
Very useful.
No.
There's no impeachment. Impeachment doesn't exist in South Africa. Here is the removal of the president. The government will put his removal of the president except that are there. This one is outside the motion of no confidence. Because motion of no confidence is a political motion. That's why we have to have it every day if you so wish. I think the court decided anyway. There's no complainant. This you can present it every time if you want. But this one is much more difficult. I think we may live to see it happening in our lifetime. It may never happen anymore. Because for a person to have evidence like that, I think they eat that they say, that you go to a nice place and end up going for people. And then it doesn't happen anyway. But I do think that it's an issue and what we are prepared now. We mustn't start debating some very grand ideas that there's no basis in it. The speaker is very different from the speaker anyway. Because by and large, speakers are from the governing party. And they should really be really, really evident that is convincing for a member of the government party, anyone who speaks, to accept that it's you can be debated in the chamber. Therefore, it's not something very easy. That's why I think we shouldn't take a view that I can just end up there and say that in the next meeting I shall move, that the president is removed, the visa, because it will be difficult to leave that situation. I think that's what we should avoid, yes. Yes. And then, Pedro, you wanted to make a point?
No, 89.2 concerns only 89.1A and B. But, yeah, C is excluded from 89.2. But the inability issue, and I think the Constitution is left wide on purpose, inability could simply be medical or physical conditions of the President, but I suppose it could also be other issues that would lead to an inability to perform the functions of office. I can't think of any, but I think the Constitution would not have wanted to exclude other than physical conditions.
Thank you. I have not heard from the Federal Advisors what their thinking is in terms of providing for a threshold. In other words, a motion that is supported by a number of members. Now, in the case of some parliaments, you have Kenya, they have a 25% threshold, and in the case of Uganda, they have a 33% and a third, a 32% threshold. But they do follow other processes. They submit to the Chief Justice, and the Chief Justice appoints a tribunal, etc. So there is a different process that they follow. But the issue is just because of the seriousness of the motion. Is it not necessary to convince broader than just one party of the need for such a motion to be brought to the House? And would that be limiting, because nothing stops parties to lobby support for this major issue? Would that be unconstitutional?
I think that was the question Mr. Handig was alluding to. My view on that is that it's very similar to what the court, or let me put it this way. I think you'll run into a similar argument that the Constitutional Court used in the Mazibuko case to say that such, in that case, because it's an motion of the conference. But this is another motion that must be brought. I mean, a resolution can't happen without a motion being brought. And depending on the nature of the motion, Parliament deals with it in the various ways. And the Constitutional Court said when you're dealing with a motion, to bring a no confidence vote. But there's a certain amount of a certain status of urgency to it, and a certain constitutional value, if I may call it that. In other words, it can be blocked. That's what the court in that case said. You can't block it with a majority. And there's no quota or no threshold that can be set unless the Constitution allows that. So I think we'll run into that similar argument when we're looking at Section 89. And this needs to be kept in mind because we're following a different process to a motion of no confidence. You're setting up a committee, but what if the House refused to approve that motion, set up a committee? Then I think there must be an alternative mechanism because the court requires, in that case at least, and I think it's analogous to this case, the court requires that it's been dealt with, that it's programmed and scheduled, And it can be voted out. But what is important for the Constitutional Court is that it serves before the House so that the public can see what is going on. And that is, in other words, giving effect to that constitutional right. It can't just be a paper right. So there is a resolution. The first resolution setting up the committee fails to get the necessary majority or quorum or whatever. There's any kind of creative strategy that is used not to get the committee, we must still find a way of dealing with that motion so that we can give effect to Section 89, even though it might result in being voted down at the end of the day. So that was my input on that. On the second question, sir, if I may, we had a very similar situation not too long ago with Premier Jenkins, if I'm not mistaken, in the Northern Cape. And I'm smart because he shared his surname, but of course it was not it was not actually a funny event at all. But she was in hospital and basically not able to resign her position. And it's in those instances where we can then use 89C, 1C. In her case, she did eventually gain some consciousness to resign. But that's what C is for, I think. It's not to penalize the president or in the case of the premier for not getting your entitlements after you serve in office, but it's a mechanism for the legislature to see how can we deal with the situation because we need to elect someone else and first remove the incumbent who is now unable to perform the functions. And my interpretation on that limited precedent that we have is that it is a event outside the control of the president in that instance, like a medical situation. And that's why there's no immunization there.
If I could just ask for clarity's sake, in the case of inability of that kind, the president in a car accident is in hospital for a period of time, the Constitution already allows for an acting president and all the rest of that. Why would you necessarily get Section 89 to remove from office? So there'd have to be some grounds of permanency or something like that to, that would need to come into play. And who would decide that?
Is the case, given the Constitution, this is my problem, is the case that if you are removed in terms of C, then you lose benefits?
No.
Well, of course, if I got involved in a serious crisis and in a coma, it's not on my own making. I can't be penalized in terms of benefits. Because, but if I'm removed because of my own
health,
therefore I can be taken out and be penalized. So I think that's the difference that I do.
I agree with the Honourable Chair. Just on Mr. Handy's question, compare Section 89 with 90. 89.1C speaks of an inability, and I think that's a permanent state. Inability, not able to. Whereas, maybe the linguist will differ from it, but 90 refers to unable to fulfill their duties. In other words, you might be out of the country or temporarily incapacitated.
Okay. Well, let us cross it, colleagues. We are home to learning. The language team, yes.
I've voted for a constitutional amendment, but you know, how is it? There's a difference between an inability to perform a function, okay, and actually not being able to push our incapacity. So, but I mean, this is something for a different forum. But see, what I want to say is, this problem will not go away. Every political party that has got the opportunity will stand up. And the bill call provides no confidence in the present. You said earlier, it's also a political game that is happening. And I really think that until such time that we actually look at the Constitution, and if we look at Part A, Schedule 3, and 6A specifically, where it speaks that the firstly, the President, the Speaker, everyone is elected by way of the Speaker ballot. And the minute everyone in the opposition benches are saying, if it is not a secret, if it is a secret ballot, we will be successful. Now, let's take for water, Chair, if there is no concern, okay, if there is no concern, should we really not consider bringing that in? This will not come up again. We will not have it once a month. We will not have it once every 3 months. because it has been taken for vote. It's been taken to a secret vote. And we will be thinking time on matters of importance and not the whole time going back to the same.
Okay, no, and as far as I know, this matter is somewhere in court.
Yeah.
Then it seems one party has taken that matter to court. It's always very correct for us not to debate the matter that the court is still going to be looking at it. If the court does decide that we need what you are proposing, surely it will be implemented. But as far as I know, the decision that we can't appeal on is a constitutional court decision. All other decisions may appeal by any other court today, let's say the Constitutional Court. Then I think let us wait for that to happen and then we can then change the rules accordingly. I don't think we could get involved in many discussions that there would be no likelihood to agree on them now until the court has taken a decision on it. Yes.
Can I just come back to the question Advocate Jenkins has raised? If the House rejects the motion, refer it to a committee. Do you need an alternative mechanism? Do you, in other words, the House is still called upon to take a decision. Would that alternative mechanism be that the charges then be put directly to the House with a motion to remove from office without consideration in the committee, without seriousness and all the rest of it? I think that would be a serious reflection on the House itself if the House prefers to go the route of plenary rather than committee to look at seriousness. But so do we... Are we suggesting there should be an alternative mechanism?
My view is that once the Speaker has taken a decision that this can be proposed, surely the Speaker would have applied his or her mind prior.
But the House didn't reject, sir.
If the House, the other court would be very difficult for the House to reject something general that has been accepted or not. Because they are still taking it to the committee.
Mm-hmm.
That committee, subcommittee work to now, then come back to the House and make proposal and as well ended the discussion about the proposal once the committee has taken it out of that. I thought the process as we elaborated on it was easier to manage on that. And then because if the Speaker says to the motion of the remover, the prima facie, evidence, take it to the chamber, we set up a committee, all arguments will be there in the committee. You can't debate it before the committee. The committee will be set up. Surely it would be very difficult to say there should be no committee at all. And then the committee will be set up. So the committee then going to discuss this matter, they come back, they report to us. It's when then we have to say we accept that or not. Then it's a creative process that actually makes that is difficult on that. But something that may not happen in our lifetime, so to speak. But it's important to also adopt the rules for future generations to consider some of these issues. They may amend if it doesn't make sense. And I know that motion is not noticed is a current problem, but we talk as if there's no future, but I think we should close it on that. Okay, let us wait it out complete. I think the state law advisor says the language and everything, the process is fine. Work it out really, make a proposal to the rules committee. You may find more wisdom there. And that positive wisdom may then assist us if they want to refer back to us. But I think we'll just check our level first. Then we'll wait for the secret ballot. I never understood why parties think that they would win through a second ballot if you got one member in Parliament. Suddenly, the members in it. Well, that also causes some misunderstanding of the government parties. But the point is that let us wait for the court. The court may decide for secret ballot. We'll put it in. And one day we'll be tested in the House. And then we'll see how it works. Okay.
Okay, let us move to chapter 10.
The Rules Committee is meeting 2.
Let us make it 1 for lunch. It's past 12 now. Because we are meeting at 3, 2 for lunch. That's what we're meeting.
Are we not meeting before?
What? No, I don't think there's any... meeting is convened unless the deputy should be convened in meeting. Okay.
Let us move. Chapter 10, questions. Focus is present.
Okay.
Before we move to chapter 10, may I suggest that we consider the scenario when the prosecutor finds that there is no prima facie case and files that notification for what form notification will be that will go back to the organization.
Then let us consider it also in the policy. We continue to prevent the monastery and the spirit of faith that we have destroyed. The member has been born. But we must find a way of doing that. It's a very serious matter, is that? Because sometimes people are misbehaving in Parliament. We can end up with something like this happening. And otherwise the circumstances will be very easy. Yes.
Chair, the request will be to the Speaker in writing.
Yes.
So the Speaker would have to say, I can't accept in writing. And I think the Speaker would have to also indicate on what grounds. But you can't prevent the member from doing a media statement saying that it has submitted such a request to the Speaker. So that publicity is going to happen in any case, I would imagine. But we may want to specify, if it's not here, that the Speaker must provide grounds for refusing.
Again, Parliament, these are political people. Parliament is about politics, what is then if we want to take our mandate, and that's why then we are concerned about some of the rules, because people are just taking advantage. The intended purpose of the rule is completely overruled. That's the issue, really. I think that member, of course, would make a lot of statements. The speaker is unfair, it doesn't agree, and there will be a lot of full of the rule. But we hope that the speaker, of course, would apply his or her correction, given the guidelines that we are putting forward. And whatever decision that is taken, then the decision will have to be considered. And on chapter 10, caucuses, what are the view of your members there? These are questions. Any issue that really so necessary for us? Yes.
Okay.
Can we go to it straight?
It's 110.
110?
Yeah.
Okay, let us go to it. Then they are checking us forward.
Okay. Once you've done it, I would like to take you back.
No, no. Take me forward, my friend.
No, you don't see me.
I don't see you. Then we need a motion of removal. Let us do that one to the president. I think the one that we are raising Natasha earlier on was that we have agreed already that we are going to set a separate day for the deputy president to answer questions in the chamber. And then because to cluster him and other ministers doesn't work. Because who didn't have sufficient time then to post questions to a cluster minister. We went on to say actually the deputy president would answer now 6 questions a month. What do we have to discuss on this area? What is the month? Because we didn't have a situation where members say, no, deputy president, Ramaphosa, if you think Ramaphosa, when they start, says it doesn't want to answer questions, it runs away, when the rule sometimes says the month is this. Because you always see, and also there's request. What happened during the first time? Is that how there is a month? Do you then call it deputy president to come and answer questions another month or another month? Because that has been a problem. Unless we are clear what we want to propose. The principle of the deputy president answering questions on the session page as deputy president not exceeding 3 hours. I think that's the point, not exceeding 3 hours. Because if we say 3 hours, means that you must be 3 hours, not exceeding 3 hours. If he's able to satisfy us with answers within 2.5 hours, 1 hour, we are happy about that. 6 questions came on that. But the point of it is that we should clarify what is the month in terms of parliamentary calendar. Because as we end up calling it that a month starting February and each December, when in fact you are going to have lots of other issues that will be having. Constituencies, oversight visits, all that, and how to deal with situations like that. We should be clear in terms of our wording. to avoid again some point scoring. If you feel that it's running away, then one to answer question. And then Patani said it's one demand for two questions. And the cluster then is going to be, we have to find another time for cluster. Because always with the economic cluster anyway. Always the economic cluster. The people then fire the economic cluster. At a time when you are posing to the economic cluster, I exhausted all of them. And give the fact that you've got deputy president and president who can answer questions for 17 hours. And they're not reaching anywhere, just answering questions. And sometimes that's why there was a decision that maybe shouldn't be not exceeding 3 hours. And whatever time within that, we can answer the question and move. But I think we must look at it seriously, because if we, or we just retain the two every 2 weeks, depending on the calendar of what we work, we must just see how we sell it to work. And then, okay, let me take Natasha.
Chief, I need a suggestion.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, the attempt was made to cut the problem of the per month by saying that it's once per month during a session time in accordance with the annual program of the assembly. In other words, the programming authority will look at the implications of once a month. And well, if you're only going to be sitting 2 days in a month, are you then going to be compelled to include the deputy president? Those would be decisions taken by the program committee. You may or may not be happy with that.
I fully comprehend what has been said. But then, just six questions. If the deputy president is only coming once a month. I mean, in the last deputy question to the deputy president, I was question number 7, I think, and he got to me and answered more questions. And that was just in that particular time. So if we extend the campus to 3 hours, which I think is great, it just helps them more than that. Should we not then put a time limit to 3 hours on the next question?
Remember, we actually had a time limit on the deputy president, but I must say, there's a huge difference between a cluster of ministers who are sharing time on their feet for 3 hours and putting the deputy president and the president on their feet for 3 hours. So I think we will have to reconsider that. How practical is that? Secondly, what we've said is we currently have 2 times 4 questions, 2 times well, every 2 weeks, which gives us 8. Now we've agreed in the document before us that we will have him once per month during session time, except for the month that the president is before the House. And then we are limiting him to 6 questions. Now what we, I suppose it won't be harmful to say, let us then look at a maximum of 2 hours, but then we don't increase the number of questions. Then we retain 6 questions. But that we then look at how often. Because as you say, it is good to have him, but if we extend on the one hand at the number of questions, then we can't increase the number of question days as well. So then we must just look at trying to find the ideal balance. Because I think where we really have a serious problem is the 5 clusters. Remember, we have so many ministers, and we don't seem to be able to work through those questions. And there is, by the way, there's also no limitation, and I think this would be, because maybe Michael can come in there and help us. How can we improve the quality during question time? Because, you see, if we can perhaps say that on prioritization, but now sometimes parties prioritize the same minister, and every member has 2 questions of oral reply. Now then, when parties prioritize, you would see that some ministers are on the dock in the house, and others just are nowhere there. How do we balance to make sure that we spread the responsibility of members of the executive to be in the house? Because some of them just look at the prioritized question list, they realize they will not come up, they have prepared their answer to the original question, which is ready to be submitted, but some of them are also saying sometimes they do extra work in anticipation of supplementary questions, and it's going to waste because they don't get, because the prioritization takes place so late that they are not able to say, well, on this question and on that question, I'm likely to have supplementaries, and on the other not. So how do we balance that? And I think that is where we need to maybe think a little further. So I know what Natasha is saying, and I don't have a principal problem with that. We need accountability. How do we just balance, getting quality replies as well from the minister?
I'm not going to speak on behalf of the bigger party. I want to speak on behalf of the smaller party. Yes, I agree that it would be better to have, say, have a deputy president come at once a month. But on the other side, too, that would give the 10 other parties an opportunity to ask a question every 4 or 5 months. So I think we must also just look at that part of it. How do we bring the balance in there as well?
Good. Well, maybe we should just retain every 2 weeks 4 questions or 6 questions, how many hours? Maybe we should do that, because the point that she's raising, the smaller parties then will post questions to the president once in 5 months, because it rotates, and they may be disadvantaged on that. And then if it is not exceeding 3 hours, once in every second week, of course the disqualification when the house is sitting, all that. 2 hours can work on that. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I think we need to allow us space to consult each other outside this meeting regarding this matter. We cannot analyze it now. Yes.
That's
why we
should do it,
but
we just rethink it.
Just bear in mind anyway that indicating that the likelihood for us to have more time in constituencies is very high. But we are not here really to listen to answers to questions when we don't link up with communities. Balancing the two. We are not here because of God was happy to be here. They are here because we are elected by the people who must always be with them. And then it's not going to be enough time, I guess, very soon. And therefore, we must shape the rules in such a way that the accommodation is there to go back to constituencies, reporting back to constituencies, and then... And then, no, not really. No, 2016 got nothing to do. 2015 is almost a trifling thing there. But the point is that even members of parliament are complaining every day that they don't have sufficient time to serve in their constituencies. If those who are deployed in Kwafu from FN, they complain about that. They go there, they just say hi, they must come back. This is an evil that colleagues are raising about this matter. And I thought the national institution must only take correct. Because what does it have for a person to say that I don't even care in my constituency? We are given resources by the state to do constituent work, but are unable to do so because we don't have time to go to constituency. Balancing this is much more difficult. That's why I learned the rules. They will give us guidance on this. Colleagues, I think the point that is made that let us look at the questions to give you first there. The present one is very easy. Once a quarter, we're increasing for not exceeding 3 hours, and same questions, I think that one is easy. The one that is difficult is the difficult present one. Even if the constituency, more time for constituencies, won't affect the president. But if more time for constituencies is given, would by and large would have a problem for every 2 weeks for the difficult president. That was the reason why the month was continuous, rather than every 2 weeks. Because if the institution take a decision that every 2 months people go to constituencies, or every month go to constituencies, not hit and run, but the whole month the constituency. Because the point that has been raised politically is that the money that is given to us, really are not utilized to link up with our community. The gap that is there between us and the community is very hard. Because we're always here answering much without notice. And then instead of doing some work, I think the leadership must consider this when members are starting to raise. And then I got my own view on it that I'm very strong on. It's my own view on this. It doesn't allow away running away from people who want to help the holding aggressive, accountable, responsive on that. Time is going to change. And every 2 weeks, the digital president may be very difficult if the decision is made on that. Because also there are a lot of committee meetings here, a lot of DBPP, and all that. There's a lot of things that have to do it here. And then once things are changing to allow enough space for constituency, simply means that even the rules by and large, that's why we must have them in such a way that they accommodate that eventually. And then if they don't accommodate that eventuality, you have to sit down again and really look at that. And then that's a bigger issue that we are going to have very soon.
Chairperson, thank you very much for your answer. Can I just add two or three other matters that was discussed in the workshop with the ANC? First of all, we want to suggest that replies to questions, which is dealt with under Rule 113. Currently it says it's limited to 3 minutes. We would like to request that we increase that to 4 minutes. 5 would have been better, but at least 4 minutes on the original question.
On the main question.
On the main question. We think it is important that the member who posed the main question should get a proper reply. So that it's 5 minutes. Yeah. 5?
4.
But 4 could work. But 5 would help. But we will settle on 4. Yeah. So if we could do that. Then secondly, we would like to... I have reported that we say at least 1 minute extra. 5 would be better. But if 1 minute is accepted, then we will be grateful with that. For that. Okay, that's the one issue. Sorry, can you allow me to just put it? Then the second issue is we would like to, there is an option on the delegation to the Deputy Minister, but we would like to just say that we strongly support not only when the Minister is absent, but then when the Minister is sometimes in the House, a particular Minister, for instance, there is a very clear division of responsibility between some deputy ministers, and they would be best positioned to reply. So we would like to say there should be provision for a delegation, even if the minister is present in the House, to his deputy minister to reply. I was thinking about COXA, for instance. Traditional leaders, etc., the deputy minister is better placed than the minister in such a case. So we would like to ask for that.
Sorry, what is that?
It is here. Can I just quickly look at it?
I've got it.
Then I'm sorry. Minister's absent. It's 2A. There were 2A is. All. Yeah. And then thirdly, we would like to suggest, we've already dealt with the number of hours on their feet for individual, for the president and the deputy president, but we also feel that we should not increase the current time frame for submission of questions and its placement on the question paper, etc. We believe it's just going to, first of all, burden Parliament, but practically, secondly, I would like to say, even in the case of Natasha's said hobby, public enterprise. For instance, many ministers are not directly service providers. They can't call the DG and say, answer this question for me. They have to sort of get the necessary information from entities, and sometimes there is a delay. So clearly, if we do that, we will simply reduce the quality of replies in the House. And we would not like to do that. We would like to make sure that there's ample time for ministers to get the right information so that they cannot just report to the House whatever comes up in their mind. So please, we can have a vision for that. Okay. But it captures in different questions, because remember there is a separate timeline, for instance, for the president. It was reduced from 16 days to 9, and we would like to say, let's revert back. Secondly, in the case of the deputy president, there are different timelines, and also ministers. It was reduced from 6 to 3, and we would like to say, go back to 6 again. Then, remember we are saying there is a provision for monitoring of questions, replies to questions. We don't have a problem with that at all. We just say that because the LODB is responsible for that as part of his responsibility as lead of government business, the Speaker's mechanism must just liaise with him as well. And I'm referring now to Rule 107B. It says here, if the leader of government business must be informed, we must just make sure that this provision, as well as provision 1173, there must be coordination with LOGB. So we must just do the fine print on that as well. Thank you.
For replies.
In other words, the Speaker is responsible for monitoring, correct, but it must be done so that the Leader of Government Business is copied in on where the problem lies.
Yes.
Chair, I think I just want to the one on
1138.
The said that for the president that we reduce to 9 working days. Currently the position is the questions must be submitted 16 days before the question going to the president. When it gets after the question paper was never specified, and therefore we always apply Rule 108, which determines the notice period for questions generally to run, and that notice period specifies 6 days prior to the day the questions are replied to. So the business questions would always meet that notice period deadline. Now, by saying 9 days, 9 working days prior to the question date, it only says it must place on question paper at least 9 working days prior to the question date.
on which piece to be replied to. I was thinking that the 9 working days if we go back to the 16 days, the 9 working days may not improve that situation, but I will just have to relook at it. Because what we are saying is to go back to 16 working days. Now, 16, if we request 9 days, it would mean that we put a question onto the question paper 16 working days before the time. I'm not sure if that is the intention, but that's a very long period. Because we will have to have a submission period, the period in which the speaker will have to approve, and then 16 working days prior to the question.
Chairperson, I think that is a misunderstanding, and if I said that's not what I meant. What I'm trying to say is, we don't want to fix what is not broken, but if there is a problem in terms of additional detail that is required in the rules, let us put that in, so that there's common understanding. But this becomes high technical, I must be very honest. What we just want to make sure is that we don't reduce the notice period. And when exactly 12 o'clock, this, that, and the following, we don't want to go into the detail of that, because that becomes very, very technical. So we just ask Michael, and that is what we try to do. We're saying, what is it that we need to build into the rules to streamline line processes, and that there could not be unintended outcomes of questions of being submitted on time, being scrutinized on time, etc. We just want to make it more difficult for members to ask questions. We want to make sure that members are not caught in a reduction of time, etc., as well as the liaison with the president's office. All that must just be practically moved into the room. That's the only intention. Thank you.
I feel.
All that I'm saying is that with regard to saying move 9 working days to 16 working days, which would be. We would eventually have the same question on the question paper about the time of prayers and answers. So what I'm trying to say is, the previous 16 days was, it must be submitted 16 days before the prayers and answers question. And then what we applied was rule 186. At the moment we have amended the notice period to 3 days, but I believe we are re-looking at and proposing 6 days before the question is replied to. So we have applied that, because in that 16 working days, the speaker must consider the questions, approve them, and then they get onto the question paper, and what we always worked with was that 6 working days prior to the question being applied to, so that you don't have a situation where the question then is a stale question if you are then to increase it to 16 working days. So I just want to say,
can I clarify this? Does it mean that if you say the current, on page 67, rule 3A, a question that is submitted all the time must be set on the question paper at least 9 days, if we keep it like that, does it mean we don't change it to 16 days, we keep it like that for 9 days, it means automatically by increasing the 3 days back, we reduce it to 3 days, by turning it back to 6 days, it would give opportune time for the question to be processed through the office of the speaker, etc. So that is what I just want to know. Because that is not the intention. The intention is not to have 16 days plus 3 extra days. You understand? The intention is to make sure that the 9 days on the question paper is fine. But what does it need before it appears on the question paper? If we increase 108, would it deal with the problem? That's the issue that I want to pose.
We need to see what the process is, and then we can see what we can. At the moment, the process for the question to get to the speaker almost takes the question office considers it, makes considerations to the speaker for consideration with regard to almost the same way that motions are. Say this, that, also edit the question and then propose it to the speaker. At an edited version of the question in terms in accordance with the practice. The speaker then considers the questions now.
Chair Allen and the speaker's got a whole lot of other things to do, so you don't always get a response immediately on the day. So we always provide like 3 days max for that. We provide then for the question to come back from the speaker, and once it comes back from the speaker, it goes onto the question paper. There are also sometimes comments coming from the speaker, we then have to liaise further with the particular parties with regard to those comments. We find a question, find another question, etc. That is the requirement. And then, and so it takes a bit of a while. And we normally would give a week for that process in itself. And then the question would then be published on the question paper 6 working days before the day on which the question is to be replied. So we would rather not say a question that submitted for oral reply must be placed on the question paper, but we would rather say must be submitted to the speaker for consideration X amount of days prior to the question day. So that we leave the notice period as previously. For the president it works at the moment.
I think it would be a good idea to link with Pascal on this.
Yeah.
That's some discussion.
Absolutely. You look very confused.
I have a mind on it and then you can then come back.
You should become also confused.
I want us to have something, those ones who go to the offices and we go to a meeting at 2. That's why I want to close this, to allow you some sense.
There's 2 points. The one is the relevancy of the question. You put it too early on the open paper, something that we have to address. And the second thing is, I hear what Julie is saying in terms of deputy ministers. For example, Jericho has got 2 deputy ministers and they have specific portfolios, which they are an authority on. But all deputy ministers, or deputy ministers as a whole, do not attend cabinet. So that is a constant diminution of the role of the deputy president in the House. People kind of say, oh, the deputy minister, what do you know, you don't have to listen to the minister. Mm-hmm. And I would not like to see the deputy minister in that way.
We know that all deputy ministers are trying specific functions.
Yeah. So I think
when the minister is there, and the Julie is a minister, is there, the deputy minister responsible for that assigned function, the minister must be allowed to say, how would the deputy minister answer this question? To the point that is there, because it's a person who's applying his or her mind on daily basis, because that's fine, that's what to do. And then he said that also to be said, that the deputy president is assigned specific function. But the point that all deputy ministers, they don't attend cabinet, but they are assigned specific function. In those specific functions, they should be able to answer in the House, whether the minister is there or not. And then that was the point that we were making earlier on. The minister should say, Honorable Cousin, under the question, should do so. Not only when the minister is not there, that's the point that they're saying. Let it happen anyway. James Jeffries stood up under the question when Masuta was there. Was Masuta after said that? But what's the point that you want to raise? Yeah, you are raising another point.
No, that's the point.
I was not disagreeing in any way about the delegation of to a deputy minister with a certain profession.
Yeah.
But I was saying that sometimes their worth is diminished in Parliament when the opposition parties pick on them. So,
I didn't know that to floor it first.
Yeah.
We are very good. We are just glorified people, but they are not doing anything, can't answer anything. And then, and by what do you mean upon?
I am just really on the good view that concerned about the fact that the deputy ministers are members of the cabinet. But I hope that I should put out that any of the cabinet ministers don't sit outside of the cabinet. They may go into Parliament and say, cabinet has decided, but they never discussion. Those proceedings in the cabinet was very fresh.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter that the difference to that.
Sure. Well, I thought you agreed on that. Okay. Bob.
And I just wanted to say we need to meet 1143 and the reason is simple because in terms of 1093, what we tried to do last time was to ensure that the reach of 1093 does not go beyond the allotted time to question the questions that would never have been replied to. So if they have now 3 hours and there are questions not reached after 3 hours, 1093 will not apply to those questions where a minister has not been in the house or the question has not been, would not, and the minister has been responded to any other minister, etc. 1143 has the effect of continuing to make the read of 1093 beyond the allotted time. So we need to delete 1143 so that 1093 only deals with questions called in the house.
Okay.
I have discussed it with Mr. Anik and I think we have.
Okay.
We have it to the technical.
Yeah.
On, then let's have three.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
We accept that. Colleagues, I think we must pray. The Rules Commission is saying unless Natasha speaks for hours, it's not going to take long. It's only going to take about 10 minutes for this group. If it does take time, it's important for us then to come back and conclude chapter 7. My main worry is that there's a pressure also, I think the speaker is correct, to analyze this thing before the end of this month, to analyze this completely. Because we have to need another week for Pastor to rework it, for us again to meet, to approve. We don't have sufficient time already. Unless we push to close it once and for all, I think we may be very late. And surely the Rules Committee, as far as I know, is not going to take more than 30 minutes, you know. Because broadly, it's about much and less. Unless Natasha again speaks a lot, and we check all the proposals, then we may take long. But the point that here is, colleagues, I think we must, if it ends at 3, we must come back for an hour to finalize our idea. If you are delayed until 4, of course, we'll come tomorrow morning. I usually do that. In fact, CASA is that very efficient. It takes a long of time to reach out to this. And then sometimes you think that is a very easy thing, it's a very complex thing. I'm not sure how he hopes, but of course it's a very experienced thing, Charles Callum. But it's a very difficult issue because you must contract with our offices too. You must contract with the state law advisors, you must contract with some many people in the legislature or parliament to finalize this issue. The sooner we conclude our work, the better. For us. I don't think we should delay it more than this. I think question after question is committees and the east. I think we're very
yeah.
At least the process will be hit because there's various lawyers making some proposals. And therefore, it's going to be a little bit heavy on that issue. I think the state law advisors themselves will have some views about legislative processes. And then the sooner we finalize this effort, I'm very worried that time is just against us now. Then unless we meet this long and have no discussion in Paris.
My sense is the speed at which we have been going, that we could finish tomorrow, whatever we do. I think we could complete legislative process, committees and so on. That's all that's really left.
Yeah.
Now there's big issues to come back to. I think tomorrow we could polish it.
Is that there are some reports that are not been submitted? They may be completely difficult. And just making aware that the other report may come in after this the workshops. Because the executive have taken a view that they are members of parliament. They are also interested generally in the rules of parliament. They make some proposals also that we may consider or not consider. But they must be allowed that place to do so. They are members of parliament, that's why they are very cheap. Only cheap, I'm told they are not. Therefore, it's important that we consider all the three that are going to be presented. It may drift, it may ask unnecessarily, sometimes unnecessarily. But we must work it up in such a way that that's it. Okay. Colleagues, can we pray for lunch and go to a meeting? Yeah? No. Gentlemen. No, they're not necessarily invited to the caucus. But they have a caucus of the HCC family. Ministers are part of the caucus of the HCC. In the area that we said, in this area, we need your views. Have you thrown the whole issue of the legislative process? Because they got views on that. Therefore, as members of parliament, they wanted to make an issue. But it's not general things that the what you do. No, my.